This show is brought to you by Onnit.com. Thank God for what?
That is brought to you by Onnit.com. Let's do this.
Go to Onnit.com and use code word church to get 10% off all of the great optimization products like Strong Bone, Alpha Brain, New Mood. I already had that. Go to Onnit.com, use code word church to get 10% off all their good optimization. We have 300 milligrams in fucking hash, so give me a break. Go to Nailed It Life. Speaking of milligrams, go to nailedatlife.com for the premier vapor pen on the market for all the oil and wax. What is that now? For all the oil? Let's just take the logo off so people can see this craziness. For all the oil and wax smokers out there, go to nailedatlife.com and use code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off of your order. And if you live in California, Nailed It Life is also the makers of Los Gumis Hermanos, some of the best edibles on the market, but you have to live in California. And go to hitecigs.com, hitecigs.com, better tasting, longer lasting, the proof is in the vape. They have e-cigarettes and e-cigars for you, in different flavors of the e-cigarettes, in different variations of nicotine if you're looking to quit smoking. When you use code word Joey's Church, you're going to get 5 hit e-cigs for $50.
Oh shit! Kick that motherfucker, Lee. Stop it, Lee. Little Michael Jackson to start off a fucking week. For all you child molesters out there, shout out. Oh shit. Monday, September 14th. The day the devil was buried at sea. Fucked in the ass. Thrown to ISIS. They cut his head off. Oh shit, here we go, Lee. Here we go, Lee. Little Motown for you. Here we go. Lee Syatt. Your Uncle Joey. The mystery guest, Mike. The witness relocated. Big Mike. Agent of the Stars.
Is it Big Mike from across the street?
Nah, that's Monica, the transvestite. Big Mike. What's happening, Lisa? Yeah?
Oh, I had a good weekend. I watched Blazing Saddles with Paula for the first. It was her first time watching it.
Did she enjoy it?
Yeah.
Did it hold up?
For me, it does.
For her,
but
for the, yeah.
I told my mom that we watched it today, and she's like, "Oh, when you're kids, it's good for girls, but it's always good for guys. But girls don't always get it. But I still love that bean scene and the farting." Just that Mel Brooks is a fucking guy. I would love to be able to meet him. He's fucking a legend.
I'm a silent film Mel Brooks guy.
Silent film is great. I still haven't seen American History Part 1 or History of the World Part 1.
That's a good one. That's a really good one. There's just so many movies that you want to see. And now with Netflix, I'm behind the fucking catalog. Because me, I want to start from scratch all over again, you know. I did watch a fucking great movie this week. You know, man, as a movie guy or whatever the fuck we are, we like to watch entertainment. And I've read scripts, and there's scripts I get made that you look at and go, this is fucking total garbage.
Yeah.
I really want to see the script for Rocky, because every time I watch the movie, it gets better and better. It's not something that I had the DVD somewhere in the house. It's not something that if I'm fucking lonely and the power's out and I got to watch a DVD, I would put in, because in your mind, you've watched Rocky 1,000 times.
Right.
But it's like a fucking relative. Rocky is like a parent. You take it for granted until you watch it, even with commercials, and you pick up little things that you go, you know what? As dumb and fucking goofy as he is, for that fucking movie, Sylvester Stallone on that day was Einstein.
Oh, yeah.
So all the stars came together. I don't give a fuck. I'll go pound for pound with that day. When he shot that movie, I couldn't even contain my tears. I could not contain my tears. The emotion that brought back to me, like where I was when I watched it the first time. I was at the Union City Cinema, and I saw a theater for the first time in my life. I saw a theater blow up. And then a year later, I saw a theater blow up again with the original Longest Yard. I never saw that in the movie theater. White people fucking on their chairs cheering for convicts. You're walking home as a kid going, why was I cheering for fucking convicts? These are the bad people. But the whole theater was on their feet. But just going back to Rocky, it's perfect.
It's hard for a guy like me because when I saw it, there's other ones like it. There's other boxing movies. whatever year it came out, was there anything else like it at all, or was this the
first? See what year it came out. Had to be 73 or 76, one of those two fucking years.
76.
Okay. Later on, when you're not doing nothing, I want all you motherfuckers to see what was nominated for Academy Awards in 76. Let me teach you a fucking lesson about movies so your fucking head explodes, okay?
Should I do 76 or 77?
Well, whatever the fuck. 76 and 77. Do the split screen. What do you got 19 computers for? To fucking be a weatherman? What was nominated that year for Academy Award?
Okay.
Your head will spin.
Best Picture was Rocky One, All the President's Men, Bound for Glory, Network, and Taxi Driver.
Are you fucking kidding me? There's four movies in that. Well, let's read them again. Read them again.
Rocky.
Okay.
All the President's Men.
Okay.
Bound for Glory.
Bound who?
Bound for Glory.
Fuck them.
Network, which I don't. That's the only one I
don't recognize. Network is tremendous.
And Taxi Driver. And,
okay. What do you think? What the fuck do you think? What the fuck do you think? Now, let's get the release date for Taxi Driver, and let's get the release date for Rocky.
Taxi Driver was also 76. Let me see if I can find the date.
Okay, so you're a fucking young kid.
February 8th of 76.
You're 10 years old. What's that one?
Taxi Driver is February 8th of 1976. Which other one do you want?
And Rocky.
Rocky. December 3rd of 76.
Okay, so you fucking...
Oh, no, sorry, November 21st.
You think of that? That was a Thanksgiving movie in those days. Now what do you go see for Thanksgiving? Dick. Rocky for Thanksgiving? Everybody, listen, if you weren't born or you weren't alive, it was fucking huge. Everybody was Rocky and everybody was doing jumping jacks. Everybody was running in the streets. Everybody was drinking fucking eggs raw. Everybody you knew, everybody who wanted to be a tough guy was, I just ate 19 eggs raw. The Barbarian Brothers were eating 36 eggs. Now you went to see Taxi Driver. The impact that movie fucking made on me as a kid. I remember that movie came on ABC Sunday night movie, October of 79.
Taxi Driver?
Taxi Driver. That's the first time I fucking...
With the whores and the fucking shooting?
Well, they cut a lot of shit out in those days. But I remember watching it in my mom's bedroom, and my head was going to fucking blow up. Like, these movies were just... But back to Rocky. That scene when he goes in to the guy, and the guy says, I want you to do this, 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 and this. And he goes, listen, I'm just a fucking ham and egger. I almost had a nervous breakdown right there in my chair. My wife had to fucking give me mouth to mouth. And then the scene when he goes to look at the thing and he sees his shorts are red instead of blue. And he tells the guy and he goes, does it really matter anyway? And then he goes back to the room with Adrian and he tells her he just wants to go the distance. So he doesn't end up like one of the bums in the neighborhood. Are you fucking kidding me, guys? Are you fucking kidding me? I almost had to fucking take 15 Valiums.
Did you have that experience when you first saw it, or because of looking back on it now?
You just look at that and go, that's how I felt. I understand what he felt like. He just didn't want to be a bum from the fucking neighborhood. Just end up in a bar drinking, talking about playing high school football or whatever the fuck they talk about, those people.
It's fucking crazy.
And have you seen the preview for Creed?
No, they say it's spectacular. I haven't seen it.
It looks interesting, yeah.
Just tilt it down a little bit. Sorry.
There we go. Better?
Yeah, people think it looks good. I just, seeing all these remakes, I just wish it would stop. But if it looks good, then I guess.
Well, Creed isn't a remake. It's the last in the Rocky chain.
Okay.
You know, so it's the sixth fucking movie he's put out. Obviously, the studios wouldn't invest in it. They didn't think they're going to get their change back.
Because
obviously, Rocky and fucking China, they throw new chucks in the movie till they fucking light dragons on fire. That's the, you know, that's what we know. What we don't know what they do here. We don't know what they do in England and fucking, you know, look at the guy from Baywatch. Wasn't he huge in Germany?
Hasselhoff, yeah.
Yeah, we don't fucking know what these people are doing.
They said that the reason why Netflix did that, like, six movie deal with Sandler was because of how well he does overseas.
Overseas, yeah.
Like, that's like they're like, oh, we don't care if they watch it in America. This fuck is for that. Over here.
In the Philippines, they're still fucking talking about, you know, him on a skateboard or whatever the fuck Adam Sandler does. So you never fucking know. Mike the Agent.
Yes, sir.
I really wanted to talk to you about comedy tonight. This is an education type thing because this is a question that every comedian has. And if anybody knows the answer, you're the fucking king of this shit. I know we've discussed it with Ari. You know, we all, we're all dear friends. We've known each other for a long time. You know Mike, the fucking agent.
Yeah, we've met many times.
Yeah, Mike's a good fucking dude. So it's more of an education type podcast. You know, I got hit up by a bunch of people about this Nick Diaz thing. Plain and simple.
Right.
Okay, plain and fucking simple. You could fight on the street corner. You could fight in a fucking gym on a Sunday for $200. Or you could fight for $500,000. They gave him the opportunity to fight for $500,000. He probably smoked a joint the day before. Am I supposed to be mad at him or whatever? I'm not mad at him. Was the fine hefty 5 fucking years? It's his third time.
Right.
It's his third time.
And it doesn't really matter if it's hefty. I mean, he must have to sign a contract that says you won't smoke weed.
Whatever
or
the fucking reason is. Whether California, whatever the fuck, Alaska, Alabama, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Regardless if it
that thing makes says
sense,
you
yeah.
can't get high. I know a bunch of you guys would love to hear, yeah, fuck yeah. Listen, man, you know, he's going to appeal it. He'll probably get it down to 2 years or 2.5 fucking years, but he broke a fucking rule. He broke it. Well, you know what? It's his third one. If he respect what he did, Mike and I were talking about this before. I love comedy. If right now, tonight, what's the guy with the one ear that just got the fucking show? Stephen Dorff, whatever his fucking name is. Stephen Colbert, whatever his fucking name. Tomorrow, I got the fucking call. They'd like for you to be on the show. I'd have to turn it down because I wouldn't represent myself properly. Somewhere, it'd have to be a fuck. Somewhere, it would have to be an edgy joke. So if I didn't look at it from that perspective, so if you came to me to fight for $500,000 and I knew deep in my heart, I love smoking marijuana. I'll lie to you. I'll tell you, I'll stay clean for, I'll give it 10 days. You know, I ain't gonna lie to you. But after 10 days, something's gonna happen. I'm gonna be fucking bored and it's all over. You know, and that's me. I just know, you have to know yourself. I'm not mad at Nick, and Nick should be, everybody should know this. There's rules in the UFC. You're in the top echelon of your profession.
And it doesn't matter, like everyone's saying, like, oh, well, weed doesn't, it's not a real drug or whatever. That could be the case, but if you and I were this high in, I don't know, what state doesn't have medical marijuana? It doesn't matter. Or one of those states, and we got raided, we could go to jail. It doesn't matter that it's legal here. And
we go to jail here, too. They can do whatever the fuck they want. They shoot people every fucking day and put a gun in your hand and said you were a terrorist. They'll do whatever the fuck it takes to clear the fucking murder. You see it on TV. 8 people beat up a homeless dude. They held them down, a gun went. Are you fucking kidding me? They got to, you know, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
They could have come in here right now and arrest us for that fucking edible and get us for possession of something else. It's not marijuana and edible. It's something completely different. You get busted one of those fucking vapor pens, it's not marijuana. It's a controlled substance.
Oh, Jesus.
So it becomes something completely fucking different. So, thank God. Listen, thank God that SAG doesn't have urine tests when I go to shoot a movie or a TV show, because I'd flunk all of them, but I'd know this going in. That's right. The UFC. What did he think? That he was going to go in there and get a 9-month suspension? This is his third one, guys. That was Anderson's first one. Third one. You know what you're telling me? When you fuck it up something like that 3 times, do you know what message you're sending me? What message are you sending me, Mike? I don't really give a fuck.
Yeah.
Mike.
Yeah. You're at that point.
Mike, you book Lee on the road for 6 weeks. Lee gets there late to 3 of them. What's he telling you? And you got him good money. What's he telling you? I don't want to do this. I'll find somebody who will. I'll find somebody who'll come here and fight and abide by the fucking rules.
Right.
Well, for $500,000 fucking dollars.
And the frustrating part is, like, Mike could just get another, well, like, the person who isn't going to fight can go fight somewhere else, or the promoter can go get a different fighter. But someone in, like, Mike's position, who is making money based on a deal, you still, like, I can't imagine what Nick Diaz's agent or manager, whoever was thinking. Like, I have, I don't know, let's say if it was 500 grand, he was going to get 50 grand. He had 50 grand riding on that. Yeah. And he doesn't know if his client's going to show up at all. Even, and then if he does,
you got to move in.
He's going to be high.
You got to move in and handcuff the motherfucker if you're getting 50 large.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just sit back and go, well, I thought, no. No. And this is, but you're a big boy.
Yeah.
In reality, I don't need somebody to move in. Hey, listen, When I was 27, I had a predicament. I had to pee in a bottle. Have you guys heard the stories of the shit I did? I used to pull my uncircumcised dick back, get pool cleaner, crush it up like salt, and put it in my dick, and put my uncircumcised dick skin back over it. And then I would pee and pull the skin back, and all the particles from the pool cleaner would close. And when I failed, the next time I used Drano. I used fucking Drano. My dick still has psychological and fucking meat scars on my dick. Thank God nobody ever looks at my dick. That's why when Rogan asked him, would somebody, would, have you dated somebody who committed suicide? No, but if they suck my dick, they should kill themselves. Because that's got Drano on it, fucking machunga juice.
How long were you sitting there with Drano on your dick? Like an hour, 2 hours? It must have been a while, right?
I would do it right away. So when I went in there with my dick, it would still be in chunks. Because if you
so
pee,
you knew when you had to take the test, though.
You had an idea. I always had to prepare. If I got high on a Friday and I walked back in on a Monday with my record, they were going to pee test me. So my job was, I wasn't going to come back clean, but I was going to throw that fucking test off. I was going to blow up the computer. The last one I did was Drano. What's the shit you put? It was either Alka-Seltzer or Drano. And the guy put it on his desk. Okay? The guy would walk me into a room, watch me pee. With the door open, I would take the bottle, pull the skin back, pee, and then the Drano chunks would fall into the pee. I'd cover it, give it to him with a glove on. He was walking with it. You could see the pink particles floating in this fucking thing.
And they never caught you?
He puts it on the table, and the thing starts shaking. You could see the thing go like it was like meth getting made. And he's like, so how you doing? What are you doing this weekend? Because he was like from somewhere in fucking Texas or something. And he doesn't even catch this. 3 days later, I get a fucking call. Dog, you fucked up the computer down. Do you know how long I fucked around with those piss tests? Do you know how bad I was? But it didn't matter. I was put in a halfway house. I was given rules. I failed one time. I had to pay my attorney like $4,000 to go in there and fight for me to put me in a non where you go spend the night at a halfway house, where you just go in from 6 to 9. And I got away with it. Then I gave him another hot for touching it, because then I stopped snorting, but I was still selling it. So I would weigh the chunks, and it would go through your skin.
So from Nick's perspective, you know that you've had two failed drug tests. You're going to lose $100,000, and you're
going to
be banned.
In my world, I was going back to prison, and I still got high, at least I am.
And what were you thinking?
With a wife and a baby.
Were you even thinking about it, or just...
Didn't give a fuck. Didn't give a fuck, so I understand where Nick is coming from.
So pretend I'm your friend back then. I'm like, hey, Joey, you're in the halfway house. You shouldn't do this coke.
Oh, I'm not going to do it. This is going to be my last night tonight. I'm never going to do it again. I'm getting my shit together. I only did this because you called me up and said it was your birthday. I'm only doing this because of you. I'm only getting high because of you. I was home. I was going to stay home with my manager and write a script and shit, but you fucking called me up to do blow. Now you're fucking telling me about my daughter. What type of fucking enabler are you? Right away, I ruined the night. Right away, then I go, fuck you. And then you go, come on, don't be mad. I'll buy another 8-ball. Okay. Now I got my hooks in you, you cocksucker. I always loved when somebody came and gave me the fucking whatever.
Right.
Because I flip it around. That's your addiction. Yeah. You flip. How dare you? What the fuck is wrong with you? I'm never talking to you again. Take your cocaine back. I was just kidding. Come on, keep it. All right.
So what do you think's in it for Diaz? Like, what does he need?
He's going to appeal it and then fucking hopefully get it knocked down to two years.
Couldn't he fight in a different state, though, or a different country? Or no?
I don't know what the rules are. I have no idea what the rules are. I think he can maybe wrestle. Didn't they say Chael Sonnen?
Maybe. Well, he's fighting in Matt Morris. I just saw the headline today.
Yeah, but that's like jiu-jitsu tournament. There's no striking and shit. I don't know if he gets... Yeah, I think he gets paid. I don't know what the rules are. They let him... He writes a letter or some shit. They don't test you in those tournaments. I don't think they test you in Metamoris. I'm not sure. Do not quote me on that. I'm a comedian, not a jiu-jitsu contest fucking rule maker.
Are there PEDs in jiu-jitsu? Do you think?
I have no idea. I don't even know what a fucking PED is.
Like steroids?
Everybody does steroids. Except you and me and this fucking guy over here. You have to assume everybody does fucking steroids nowadays or some form of something. Remember, there's people on anti-aging stuff.
Right.
You know, so there's everybody in Hollywood wants to live to a fucking they're 100. So if I could sell you a fucking dream package that you're going to live to 100, come in here every week, I'll shoot you. Just keep drinking water and eating sushi at Sushi Den, and everything will work out for you. You know what I'm saying? Whatever, Lee. Well, I don't fucking know.
It's fucking, it's just, I mean, he must have enough money. He must be doing something else, because I was going to say it's too bad he's ruining a career, but...
Well, I think he trains people. Listen, they paid him $500,000 for 2 or 3 fights. He made some money. They come back. They figured that would get him focused. Remember, he didn't show up to a fucking table reading. They pulled him off the fight, and they put him up against somebody else. And I like him. I love him and his brother. I'm fans. But this is the reality of it. You're at the top echelon of a league that's getting weirder and weirder every fucking day.
Right.
It's getting weirder and weirder. So why are people even, well, we don't know what's
going on. Isn't Nate not even fighting right now? He's like waiting for a better contract?
I have no idea. I wish I fucking knew.
How do you, Mike, how do you, I don't know what the word is, give your advice to a client who, because your money depends on them bringing money in, well, then you want them, then they're like, oh no, I'm fine, I want to hold out, but then.
It's tough because you're dealing with an addiction, right? And like Joey said, they're professional liars at that point. They'll convince you and everybody else on how this is different, and you know, in the comedy space it happens all the time where you'll deal with someone and they'll have a problem and they'll go to rehab and they'll come back and be like, hey, everything's great, let's hit the road, let's go tour, let's go do this, and you gotta trust them, right? I mean, that's your guy, and they're telling you hey, this is, everything's fine, everything's great, I got it together, I'm going to meetings, everything's fantastic, and they sound great, and then all of a sudden you're hearing stories about
they don't make radio. They got locked in the room.
But then there's an excuse. There's something right. that happened. Oh, they fly. My alarm didn't go off. And then they're good the next week. And then the week after that, you know, something else happens. And it's very, very challenging, especially when you care about these people. You know, like Joey said, there's only so much you can do. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, they have to want to help themselves. You know, I mean, look at, like, Diaz is a perfect example. He had $500,000. Going for one fight, and he still chose the drug over that. I mean, there's nothing any person can say. I mean, you could lose your family, you could lose everything for an addiction, and it happens.
Would you still work with someone who's been through a couple failed drug tests or whatever, or gone, like, at what point do you have to say, I can't work with you anymore?
It's very tricky. It's a tough call to have, you know, because you feel for them. You know, you're It's kind of like asking a brother, when do you stop talking to your brother? You know, he's disrespected you time and time again. He hasn't paid you back. He hasn't done this. You know, it's any kind of addict is always a tricky situation. But there does come to a point for sure where you're risking your professional career and you're risking your reputation for them. And there does come a point for sure where you have to kind of have that conversation. Go, dude, I can't do this anymore. Like it's I don't trust you. And once that trust is gone, it's very hard to kind of bring it back. But I don't know, man. I don't have the answer on that one. That's a tough one. I've been through some pretty brutal situations where, you know, your heart gets ripped out and you don't know what to do.
Not even with the drug situation, just, I mean, you must have clients who you're trying to guide in certain ways and maybe the deal doesn't go well and then you get fired or it just, there's so much... Seems like there's so much that isn't even based on the job when it comes to that kind of relationship. It's like a lot of times it's factors that had nothing. It's like why professional coaches get fired a lot. Like they get the blame.
Always. Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, but it's what you signed up for. I mean, you know, we're the last ones to get credit for anything, even though it could be our idea or it could be, you know, us pushing you into something. And then, you know, it's always the act kind of getting 100% of the credit as they deserve, and but you're the first one to get blamed if anything goes wrong. If a flight gets delayed, if a fucking club doesn't pay you, if any of that kind of stuff, you're always the first one to get blamed. But you know that's part of the game. And I think as long as the client knows you're doing the best you can, you know you're always going to get fired for no reason. You're always going to get yelled at for something that had nothing to do with you. That's the name of the game. You know, and you got to develop a really thick skin.
Brass tacks, since we're on the subject. If I was doing what I did now and doing blow, we wouldn't be here, you and I. This would have been over a while ago. Especially those 6 a.m. ones.
Oh, yeah.
this wouldn't happen. My road career would have been done.
Yeah.
After 90 days, the True Colors would have came out. There's no way. There's no way. You have no idea what I went through from 2004 to 2006. I would cancel the morning out. I'd wake up and still be paranoid from the night before, and there was no way I was going to the airport. There was no way.
Wow.
Well, okay, Joey, but we just saw that there's a there's an 11 o'clock. You could still make it. That's not going to happen.
What would your excuse be?
I got a cold. I got arrested at the airport. I lost my license.
You got really, really good at making excuses, right? You're probably the best.
Oh, it was, and I was really good at booking myself.
Yeah.
And at that time, I had, in 2005, before The Longest Yard came out, my phone started ringing from a couple people. They all sucked.
Yeah.
And then I bumped into Bill Burr on a plane, and he told me to call Mike Berkowitz. That's when they were with a different company.
Yeah.
Way before APA. And Mike Berkowitz threw me 3 weeks. But I knew people. So I was booking these B rooms, these C rooms, getting out a bad payday. I wouldn't show up. I wouldn't show up the day of. And I knew it. I fucking know it.
Even though you needed the money?
Even though I needed the money. I would wake up in the morning, look at the luggage and go, not today.
So here's a question. So what... Is there anything anybody could have said to help you get there? Is there any, like, if you had, you know, an agent, a manager, is there anything that anybody could have said on the phone to get you on the plane to go there? You're just, there's no way you're going.
No, I don't feel good. I got up, I got the flu, I twisted my ankle, I went to the airport and I got arrested.
Yeah.
There was a bout with paranoia between the pills they were giving me at the doctor's. The coke and the years of abuse, I had gone into a different place in my mind, and I didn't really give a fuck what anybody thought. I really didn't. I remember calling Rogan in the morning and going, call somebody else, and him yelling on the phone for 8 minutes and me just hanging up the phone and unplugging it. It's not gonna happen. I'm not going to the airport. I'm too fucked up. And don't get me wrong, I got on some planes, fucked up on the way home. Oh.
Did you ever do that? Did you ever, at like a place, like out on the road, not want to go back to L.A.? Or did you always make that flight?
I always made that flight in the morning because I knew it was death. Except for the time I bought the 30 Valiums in Beaumont, Texas. And I started eating them on Thursday. And by Sunday morning, I was incoherent. I got picked up Monday, taken to a hotel in Houston. The club owner of the laptop said, just go to the Intercontinental and sleep. I slept at the Intercontinental from Tuesday, guys, to Thursday. The Valiums didn't wear off. You figure I had 30 times 10 milligrams of Valium in my system.
300.
I was 400 fucking pounds. Never did I break a sweat, only when I snorted blow. I did not drink water. I drank Coca-Cola straight out of a fucking can from the beginning of the morning to the end of the day. That Valium was going to sit in my system. And every time you lit a joint, the Valium restarted. I remember calling Mike Berkowitz and yelling, like, what the fuck, pick up? And I couldn't even talk straight. Still, my face was numb from the blow and the Valium. So, seriously, this is how fucked up I got. I went on the road to get fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, I went on the road to get fucked up. By the time I got to my destination, the packages were ready. The calls were made the night before. We were going deep. Houston, Dallas, El Paso, Miami, Buffalo. In fact, I was thinking of just calling them to say hello. Jeff in Myrtle Beach.
Oh, yeah.
I love Jeff. That's my dog. Jeff and his wife in Myrtle Beach.
He's your drug dealer in Myrtle Beach?
No, he was the comedy club owner. He paid me $500, but I made $1,000 doing fake rentals.
What?
Well, what's a fake rental?
You know, when you sign up. And you sit there and take the ear beating for their fucking condominium to sign up. And at the end, you get $75. I would sign up for 3 of those a day. What, are you kidding me? I put earplugs on. I'd sign whatever the fuck you want me to sign. It was before 9/11. They weren't checking IDs. What, are you kidding me? I was Joe Smith, John LaBamba.
They just give you $75 cash?
$75 cash. And they give you an ear beating for an hour and a half. Why you got to sign up? Let me go back and talk to my attorneys. I'm trying to loosen up this building in Manhattan.
Have you seen those signs around LA, like $99 round trip to Hawaii?
Yeah, yeah, that's same what that, shit. That's what that is.
And apparently, because I went to go look, I was like, what is that? $99 round trip to Hawaii. Apparently, if you go as a couple, they'll turn to the guy, to the girl, and being like, "Why are you with this loser? He's not going to buy you a timeshare in Hawaii." But if you do it, you get $99 round trip airfare.
And that's after they fucking take your car keys and hide them. Oh, that's an ear beating and a half. They wouldn't fuck with me.
Do you think it's worth it?
If a blow in those days, $75, 75 for a packet, 75 to get my dick sucked, and 75 for some cocktails, what are you nuts? And I still walk out of Myrtle Beach with a nickel on fucking Sunday night, what are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me? I'd get up early, all coked up, and go to that fucking high. I like to buy a condom. What's your name? What's your present value? I think I'm worth about $80 million. I got a building up. I want to hear your speech. I got a building I'm trying to move in Midtown Manhattan. I'm dropping the price from 11 mil to 9.5. But I'd like to buy one of these timeshares. Come on in. And I'd sit there and bullshit them, and I'd take the area beating. Sure, 8.9 percentages. I'd be dropping mortgages, international fucking yen fucking rates and shit. I'd get them all confused. And at the end of the day, 75 beans, cash and dola. And then I walk down the block to the other suckers, tell them some fucking story. I'm a Chinese immigrant. I got property in Hong Kong. I'm trying to move. I swear to fucking God, I did this every time I went to Myrtle Beach.
That's great.
And they loved it. Everybody was like, oh. And I just told all the comics. And all the comics started fucking doing it. What are you, nuts? Who the fuck you think you're dealing with, Lisa?
How did you convince them to give you $75?
I didn't convince them. They convinced me.
Yeah, but if you're like, yeah, I own Look, a building I went in Manhattan, there, I like, went there my 75?
Listen, I went there one Christmas. The only time I could work the club is in the holidays because I was too dirty for the summer. It's too many white turf.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff loved me. I knew Jeff from his Milwaukee days. They used to book Appleton. That's how long they've been in the motherfucking game. And his wife, she's a fucking knockout 20 years ago. She's probably still a fucking knockout. And then they said they broke away from that lady that used to book Milwaukee that controlled that place, the gang place, the one that belonged to the bikers in Milwaukee. JD, he's gone now. 6'9", 300 pounds. When he paid you, there was a gun on the thing. All the doormen had suits, triple John Gotti suits. Everybody was a gangster. Big family dinner Thursday night. Big family dinner. He was the VP of like a big time biker gang.
Wow.
And the headquarters, they've been on gangland, the whole fucking thing. This guy was huge.
And also owned the Chuckle Hut.
That was their front.
Yeah.
The condo looked like something from the fucking Munsters. The furniture was beige. People had come all over it. It was horrible. Then they also have the club in Appleton, the bikers. It used to be bikers that owned Appleton also. There were two biker brothers or something like that. I'm going back 20 years ago.
Yeah.
They ran that. The lady kind of went crazy, gave the business to her. She also booked Marquette University. I remember doing Marquette to her on a Tuesday night. They booked all that. They went to Myrtle Beach, bought a home, and opened up the Comedy Shack. The Comedy, whatever the fuck it is. And they're nice people. It's just... they're nice, clean people, you know what I'm saying? I go down there and get fucked up down there. Those bars in the strip, the water's warm. Everybody plays golf. That's the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody goes down there, goes to timeshare and play golf. The question I wanted to ask you, Mike, that a lot of comics listen to this podcast, and I remember being a comic in this town. And you come to town, you get made a regular at the Comedy Store. I was very fortunate I got made a regular a month afterward. Got here January by February, I was in the store.
Wow.
A week later, I got made over at the Improv. The guy was a boozer, and he liked me. He used to sit in that thing up there in the little office and just get high and watch me. And one day, he goes calling for spots, and he started giving me two spots a week. So I was rocking and rolling. Jimmy Masada didn't like me, but Gilbert Escavel booked Monday nights. Jamie didn't come in on Mondays. So Gilbert always gave me the 9:25 spot. Are you fucking kidding me or what? So I was rocking and rolling. So right away, you think you're making progress. And there was a company called IAG. And I'd walk in there with my manager, Ken Phillips. Ken Phillips was a genius. He got fired because he tried to send faxes on colored paper. He spent $100 of the company's money on yellow paper. Little did he know. You know what I'm saying? This guy was really money. Ken, did you call the fucking guy? Yeah, I called him. He hasn't answered the phone in 3 weeks. That's funny. He just gave me 2 weeks. He gave me Buffalo and Miami. I don't know what fucking line you're calling. I swear I've been calling the guy. Tremendous. I love Ken.
Yeah.
So I had Ken, and I had Ken call around. And at that time, there wasn't a lot of booking people. In 98, you had The Wig, Richie Soups. I don't think Innovative was booking.
No.
I don't know who at CAA. Who was at CAA? Yes. I remember who was that. Oh, ICM had a booker.
Mm-hmm.
CAA had a booker. I don't remember who he was, but I remember the ICM booker. He's at another agent now. I remember that whole thing. And we went through all of them. There was a big booking agent who booked Carlos and somebody else, AJ Jamal, and a bunch of other guys out of IJ, and everybody passed on me. I was fucking heartbroken.
Hmm.
Heartbroken. Hey, I'm a funny guy. I'm at the store four nights a week. I'm at the improv, too. You know, I'm featuring. I'm starting the headline. If you sign me now. And, oh, DJ was over at the Feature Factory. That was the best agency at that time. If you were a feature, Omnipop. Because at that time, they were really booking features as headliners in small clubs. They were developing 20 guys, which was fucking genius. Half of those guys are still around today. Ian Bagg. I don't even remember the rest of them, but I see them around town. But he had a bunch of guys in those days that were really Tom Parker, Tom whatever.
Tom Papa?
No, Tom somebody else from South Carolina, one in that area. He had a bunch of guys that were really features, and he was grooming them to headliner for, you know, and that was the only agency that did that.
Mm.
In those days, either you fucking were Wendy Liebman, you know, or nobody else booked you. I didn't understand why I couldn't get somebody. I got a couple bites during the longest yard, but it still wasn't complete. When is it that a comic needs to start getting booked?
You know, it's tricky. For me, I'm unique in the fact that I look for a rock solid hour, and then that's the bare minimum for me. So, you know, I get all the time comedians that are very, very frustrated, and they come and think, I don't understand. I kill every single night. And I go, yeah, you're a professional comedian. That's the entry level to being a professional comedian is you should be able to be very, very funny for an hour. Now, what else do you do? Do you have the right look that can get cast in this TV show that's going to blow up? Are you writing screenplays? Are you doing a podcast? Are you going out there and hustling? Are you figuring out a mailing list? You know, someone who's willing to do the work that it takes. You know, it was different a long time ago. It was different 15, 20 years ago when you could just do a Tonight Show spot and all of a sudden your calendar would be booked for the rest of the year. I've had a bunch of comedians that I've worked with who literally told me that exact story. I mean, who was Roseanne's ex-husband?
Tom Arnold.
Tom Arnold was telling me a story. He I think he had 7.5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes of material. He did one Tonight Show set, and he's never not had to work. He's never not worked from that moment on. Like his calendar's been full from the time he did the Tonight Show set. And that just doesn't exist anymore. I mean, there's so many more opportunities, so many more performers. So now it really is, okay, great, you're funny. What more are you doing? And I mean, I think you're the perfect example of a comic who was killing every single night and frustrated. Instead of waiting for some rep to come in and save the day, you took action and you built your own career. You know, I mean, look at what you're doing now. You're spending time on a Monday night. Most comics right now are sleeping. You know, they're at the store, they're watching Netflix, they're doing whatever. You're working. You're building a career. You're putting your time in. You're putting your effort in. And you know, I think that always translates, especially now. So that's what I tend to gravitate towards, you know, is those comics that are willing to do, okay, great, you're funny, but what else? You know, there are other people that will just chase it. Hey, okay, you're a cute 21-year-old girl who's got 2 minutes. Let's see if we can cast you. And there is a business there for a small time. But really, to build a long career, I think it has to be this. I think it has to be effort to be able to maintain it. You know, we were talking the other day about Earth, Wind & Fire, and their agent was telling me that it's like, I can still put Earth, Wind & Fire at Bonnaroo, and they'll walk away with thousands of new 20-year-old fans who had no idea who Earth, Wind & Fire was. You know, they still have it, and they're still willing to go out there and work. And there's no ego in it. They're willing to go take an opening spot at Bonnaroo and just blow people away. You know, and I just find those to be very cool, interesting stories. And a lot of comics get this ego. They get this, well, I'm past at the store, so I shouldn't have to do that. I'm the funniest guy in Kansas City, so I shouldn't have to start over. That, fuck that. I don't want to do that. You know, so there's not really one thing to do, but I would say, you know, figure out what you're really good at on top of just being funny and use that as a resource. You know, I mean, you're a fantastic storyteller, so the podcast was a perfect medium for you.
It was perfect.
Totally.
So it's 1995, gentlemen. I don't mean to interrupt you, Lee. It's 1995. I'm doing comedy 5 years. I'm doing comedy seriously between us at the table. I'm doing comedy with everything I got for 3 years at this point. The first 2 years, I was just wasting my time giving out business cards, telling people I'm a comedian, getting on stage once a month, going down there just to make a drug deal. You know what? I will meet you at the coffee shop. I go down there and do a spot. You know, I swear to God, it was like a part-time thing.
Yeah.
Then I realized effort has to be put into this, and that's when everything changed. So it's 1995. This was the formula. This was it. I know you're a young guy, Lee. You ready for the formula?
Mm-hmm.
You come to Hollywood, you get passed at the store, the Improv, or the Laugh Factory. You go there every fucking night, you bang it out. A manager was going to come up to you, and eventually an agent's going to come up to you. It's that fucking simple in those days. They come up to you, give you a card, 2 days later, you're in their office and bullshit, they were offering you water and giving you their spiel and saying you're their type, blah, 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 blah.
Didn't you tell me that, like, people used to wait at the store with, like, plane tickets?
This was way before. This is 20 years before me.
Oh,
okay. I'm talking about 1990, my dream.
Oh, okay.
This is what you had to do in 95. You had to come down here, do that, do some spots, and then you had different paths. A, you could either go to Tonight Show path in that day and blast it that way, or B, you'd go to Movie path, or there was another path.
TV. You know,
go to Montreal.
Yep.
The whole thing, Pat. Now, here's what happens. Let's pretend you don't get, you're not a Tonight Show guy, and you're not a whatever guy. But let's say you bust out in 6 episodes of the hottest show, Modern Family. This is 1995. You bust out in 6 episodes of Modern Family out of 13. They used to be 26. 13. You bust out in 6. In those days, your booking agent came into the store. I'd love to sign you. We'll get you out next week. And in those days, and when a comedy club put from Modern Family, boom. They didn't give a fuck who the person was. That was how the formula. If you recurred on one of those shows, then right from that recurring, you'd pop a special. Comedy Central, HBO, maybe Showtime in those days.
Yeah.
But it was that simple. That was the fucking formula.
That's all it took?
That's all it took. And then you went from there. Then you just got booked into different things. Sometimes you laid off. Sometimes they just threw you on the road. I didn't know the formula why they threw you on the road. Sometimes they threw you on the road. There was big money involved. I remember when I started, the guy with the smile, Bobby Collins, was very hot. And that day, the genius, Wendy, from the Comedy Works in those days, Monday night, she'd have Bobby Collins in there, and she would give him like 10 grand for 2 shows because of his Certs commercial. A fucking commercial that you knew he was Bobby Collins. You know, you guys were kids. You don't even fucking remember.
Yeah.
There were Bobby fucking Collins. So Bobby Collins would come and go, hi, I'm Bobby Collins for Certs. They keep my teeth white, and he'd eat a thing, and he'd smile. Bam! They put a fucking flyer up in every city. Bobby Collins is coming to town from the fucking Certs commercial. When I got here, there was two idiots on a McDonald's commercial. Scott something and some guy. They got a McDonald's commercial where the celebrities would walk in and they'd stop him with a hat on. That guy was on the road making fucking money for fucking ever. Because you made money from those things. That shit don't happen today.
Well, isn't that good in a way? To be honest, hasn't the quality of stand-up gone up?
It's forced it to, for sure. I mean, you can't really just get by based on a commercial now. People figure it out. I mean, you know, Dustin Diamond is a perfect example of like, okay, you can have some fame, but people aren't going to come back the second time and the third time and the fourth time.
Unless you got the comedy
chops. You have to have the comedy chops.
That's where the comedy chops come in. When that little window opens up,
yes,
you better be ready. Because if they put you on the road, they're going to put you on the road for 45, then it's going to get out, and all of a sudden you're going to have fucking you know, somebody opening up for you doing 15 just to kill fucking time. Then it's 15, and then you're off the fucking road.
And that happens. That happens all the time today.
Sure it does.
But, you know, that's why I always say, you know, once you have that rocking hour, then it's, okay, what else do you have? You know, once you have that, because that's not a career, right? I mean, going on the road because of a commercial now, you might be able to fill seats, or you might, you know, if you get an arc on some big TV show, you'll fill seats for the first time in, but those people will tell their friends, nah, that guy sucks, don't go see him. And you want the opposite. You know, I'd rather sell 300 tickets a weekend than 400 tickets a weekend than 800 tickets a weekend, you know, and build it that way than kind of the reverse pop. So,
and then I don't know about you guys, but a couple New Year's, Rob Schneider headlined in Boston. And and they always advertised it as like Rob Schneider from Deuce Bigelow, like whatever movie they were saying it. And even before I was ever into comedy at all, I was like, well, I don't want to go see him do Deuce Bigelow stuff. Like, I think it might turn a lot of people away.
Well, that's what happened. I remember being in Miami and having a feature week and another feature week. And that third week, Joe Rogan was walking in. I'll never forget this. This is big time. And he was Joe Morelli, whatever his fucking name was, from News Radio. He was there with Chris McGuire, who's now a big-time writer on all these little comedy shows. And I was there, and I said, fuck it, I'll stay in MC for you guys. And every night, somebody would pull him over and go, I am fucking blown away. The language was awful. You should be ashamed of yourself. And he would go, what's the problem? You know, I came to see Joe Gorelli, the goofy guy, you know, that boxes and stuff. Trust me, people sucked into that.
Yeah.
They thought they were coming to see that guy. Listen, when the longest yard came out, I remember a distinctive night. The guy now runs the small club in Atlanta. Nice guy. What's his name?
He runs Jamie?
The other guy. He runs a small club
in Atlanta. Laughing Skull?
He gave me a shot to come into his old club, a big club. And I'll never forget one night, I was walking in there, and this lady and her husband and their friend bought like a table of eight. And they're like, oh, my God, there he is. And they hug me, and they're like, you and Adam Sandler, where we love Adam. That's why we're here. When I got off stage, I went to pass them. They sucked themselves in and looked the other way and would not touch me with their bodies. Like, they were great. They thought I was going to go on stage and trip and break a guitar out and be like one of Adam Sandler's guys. And that's when I realized I got to find a way to let these people know who I am. This was the whole thing. That night always stuck with me.
Yeah.
And then I went to see The Wrestler. And the reason why I went to see The Wrestler on the first night, which how long we've been hanging out?
4 years.
Do you ever see me telling you I'm going to movies, standing on line? I don't give a fuck.
Every weekend.
No, a Wrestler.
This is all an act.
Wrestler came out at 11:30. I was there at 11:15.
Yeah.
With 80 other people. And each of them was saying, I've been waiting for this movie for 8 months. So was I. And I started thinking, how did people know about this movie 8 months before it fucking came out? That kept me awake for fucking 6 fucking days. I wanted to know how people knew this was coming out. Did they leak it on YouTube? Because I didn't see it. Somebody had told me, and I went on a computer page and I saw the hidden trailer or something like that.
That's it. So they didn't promote that The Wrestler was coming out?
No, what I'm saying is that I knew it was coming out 6 months before, so it got me very excited. Now you go see a fucking movie, it's coming out 2 months later, we find out about it.
Right.
I found out about Black Mass when I went to see Mad Max. That's fucked up, right? Black Mass, Mad Max. So it was 2 months ago.
Right.
The Wrestler, I knew it came out in December. I was talking to somebody about it in July, and they were telling me that he was training, that this is the fucking movie, that it's a low budget, that's why he's going to be really good, make sure I fucking saw it, that somebody saw a screening of it and came out crying. That word got out. That's a powerful word. Remember when you and I had a discussion about 1975?
Vaguely.
When we first met, we got really high one day, and I gave you chills because I started telling you about Boston.
And like Aerosmith.
I started telling you about marketing. I started telling you about the Boston Red Sox and the Boston Bruins. And the Boston Celtics and whatever else was going on in Boston. But here's these five little dirty white dudes from Quincy or wherever the fuck they're from, and they're making the national headlines. There was no Twitter. There was no Facebook. Newspapers didn't call other newspapers and say, do a write-up. word of mouth was very big. I wanted to know how to get word of mouth because that's the one that people trust the most.
Of course.
Is when I look at you in the office and go see fucking Sebastian.
That's how podcasts got promoted. That's how I found out about them. Word of mouth. There's no advertising for podcasts. I heard the first one the other day. Jimmy Pardo did one. He had like a, he was a spokesman for like AutoZone and said, listen to whatever his podcast is. But like this, the only way I ever found out about podcasts was Facebook and then people in my office.
It's just...
Same thing happens for comedians. Yeah. Right? I mean, look, Bill Burr is a perfect example of that. Of a guy who built it just based off of people telling their friends, you got to listen to this thing. This thing's amazing. And then putting out quality hours. I mean, you're no different. You know, think about what you've built on the road. And
but here's the funniest thing, and I've had this discussion with you.
Yeah.
When my agent signed me to do comedy, I was doing comedy 20 years. I had an hour just being me. But I was not really a headliner. I really wasn't ready. I remember those first couple of weeks I went out.
Yeah.
I was really having a rough time with people who had come to see me from listening to the podcast. They were still like, ugh, this isn't... Hmm. It took me a while to flow it. And then I think it was like in Kentucky that when I got off, I said, uh-oh, I'm a fucking headliner. I just balanced these guys. I knew what material to hit them with. I was very prepared. But it took me a while, and I've been very honest about it.
Yeah.
You know, I remember Columbus didn't hire me for a long time, and I said, that's because I bombed last time I was there. There were people there, but I didn't do that well. I didn't do that well. I didn't feel like I had done a good hour.
We talked about TV shows and movies. What was it like for you as a comedian after doing the Rogan podcast one or two times? Like what was the reaction like?
Well, okay, so I'm in this fucking town. I got the coloring book for a theatrical agent. Did I ever tell you about that?
No.
The coloring book was my first theatrical agent.
Is that the name of an agency?
First, I signed with a manager. I met him at the Improv. He was managing Carrot Top, and he left. They all left that company they were at and opened up different offices across the country. They all got a severance package, and they all left. He took his money, came out here, bought a brand new car, a few suits, got some cards, some rings on, and started fucking peddling management. He signed myself, but he went towards Black Axe. But I tell you who he did find. Gary Owen. He signed Gary Owen out of the Navy. As soon as he signed Gary Owen, and that's the thing. The guy worked for me minimally with Gary Owen. He took him right. Gary Owen and him were making money right from the beginning. Mm. Then he got married and something happened with the chick, and his father said, you ain't making no money. I can't keep giving you money. And he flew him back to North Carolina, something like that. But I remember we sent packages out together. And at that time, I had a pilot at CBS. Did you know that?
No.
I was showing up with an envelope. I wasn't just showing up like some schmuck with a headshot. I was showing up with an envelope and a minimal thing. But I was showing up with a CBS fucking deal. All you had to do was call and close it. And you had me. The coloring book. A black agency in the...
It's not a black agent.
Yes, it was. It was two black chicks. And it was one chick that was a badass attorney. Like, this bitch just called people and they would tremble because her husband was somebody. And the other chick was an attorney and they both went to Georgetown. This was no joke. Listen, man, this chick worked for me. She didn't fuck around. But I was in an agency called The Coloring Book. Their resume, I always had to have pink ones or yellow ones. But it was fucking ridiculous. SBV signed me, which at the time was a huge commercial agency. When you'd walk into SBV, you were somebody. What? They had muffins. People called you Mr. Diaz. You could walk into the back and get your checky poos. They had Christmas parties back then, Thanksgiving parties. All the clients would come down and eat and mingle. I haven't been to a fucking agency Christmas party in 12 fucking years. Those things got shut the fuck down in this town. Okay, so I showed up with a pilot. Little bit of money. The coloring book fucking signed me. Then I booked basketball. I like the coloring book, but I'm a comedian. I gotta be with ABA. Doug Stanhope's at APA. Everybody's at APA. I'm at the fucking coloring book. The comedy store kept saying, giving us a headshot. I couldn't because it said the coloring book on the bottom. I couldn't fucking do it. Do you understand the struggle I went through? So now I booked those two things. After basketball, then the Taco Bell commercial, I started knocking on doors. And still,
still with the coloring book?
Go fuck your mother. Go fuck yourself. It was brutal. But then I booked Telemundo, and I got AFTRA. I booked a show on Telemundo for $1,000. I went down there, and I was a Cuban doorman. I booked it. In those days, you had AFTRA and SAG. I was AFTRA. It's the hottest Spanish show on Telemundo about Cubans, a Cuban-American family in Burbank. And it shoots in Burbank. I fucking go up there, dog, report on time, rehearse. They go, all right, let's go eat lunch. I'm in my car, the phone fucking rings, the pager goes off, I go call. They fired me. They just didn't like my Spanish. They didn't like me at all. And they were two different. Listen, there's...
So why did they catch
you? There's jungle Cubans and there's decent Cuban. I'm a jungle Cuban. Because I fucking knocked the audition out of the hotel. But it didn't matter. They paid me and they paid for my after. Who's better than Uncle Joe? You understand me? So I'm cooking with gas. I'm figuring I'm going to do something. Guess what show becomes the hottest show on TV? The Sopranos. Now everybody's doing Soprano spots. Guess what? Boom. Mad TV got a sketch. I get up at fucking 9 o'clock, coked up to the gills. I got 19 messages. Every fucking agent, friend, assistant... comic that got breakdowns. That was the big thing. Call me up. Joey just... Dog, I walked to fucking Mad TV, you know. Walked in there with my headshot. People were looking at me. This is before 9/11. People were looking at me like, what's this kid doing in here? And all of a sudden, what's the black guy that does the impersonations? He saw me. And he used to see me at the store, would always just wave at this moment.
Ari Spears?
Ari Spears came over. He goes, what are you doing here, dog? You here for the motherfucking Soprano sketch? Oh, shit. Oh, shit. And he grabbed me. I walked in. They were auditioning piano players or whatever, magicians. He got me right to the front of the line. I went in there and knocked the pants off. I got that. Once I got Mad TV, I started talking a little shit.
Yeah.
I had to start dropping names and shit. Fuck you. Nothing, Lee.
So you're then booking everything yourself. Then
Jamie Kennedy popped the show.
Are you just booking everything yourself at this
all
point?
All myself.
Okay.
Jamie Kennedy pops the hottest show on TV, the hottest reality hidden camera show. Guess what? The producers live in my building. They're doing a mafia one. They deliver pizza. Again, I'm on TV because the show got so hot and they didn't order another 13, so they kept playing our episode. People kept coming up to me at the store. Oh, my God, I saw you. I'm calling APA. I'm calling fucking DEA, PPP. They're all telling me to go fuck myself. I'm out there every afternoon on Wilshire spending 15 in the park, dropping envelopes, dropping names on people. Then fuck them. Nobody would talk to me. Then I got the De Niro movie. Then I really started dropping fucking names. Analyze that. Still, nothing. But I thought by analyze that, at least I would start selling tickets. Nothing. So what I had been told to do 3 years earlier, I was doing, and now I wasn't getting. Do you guys follow me? I'm not throwing a pity party here. Yeah. I'm just telling you what my reality was. That I was attaining the goals I was told to attain, that I would start fucking blossoming. Nothing.
It's in, my cousin went to Ithaca Film School right at the end of tape. And it all went to digital, and he wasn't in the industry. So it sounds like you just at the end of an era, sort of. It just, it's, I guess it kind of hurt you, but not really.
Who the fuck know? Boom! NBC is doing a show about a family of lawyers. Now, I'm in a pilot. I'm a bartender in a pilot. A CBS bar, a fucking show that... It was supposed to go up against NYPD Blue. They had paid the director $1 million an episode to fucking do the fucking show. It's going to go on for sure. It gets canceled. You have no idea. Like, it get, like I was going to, and I was going, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah.
All these people at the store popping deals and their shows are getting put on. I pop a fucking CBS pilot and I'm going to be like an 8 out of 12. And now I'm fucked. They're not doing it. Then I booked this other pilot at NBC. About 6 lawyers that lived in a house. I was going to be a recurring maintenance man, dog. And I find the pound. I'm a plumber, and I'm fixing the pipes. And what do I find in the walls? 30 pounds of pot. So now I'm part of a conspiracy. It's Belafonte's daughter, and it's somebody else's son. The show comes out of the fucking gate. It's going to blow up. I'm in episode 6, 8, 9, and 10. Somebody else was making a comeback. I still see him around town. He was in episode 6, 8, 9, 12, and 13. We're all waiting to be big stars. The show gets canceled. Episode 5, Lee Sayer.
Oh, God. so gross.
Now I'm so. It was just weird that the evolution of this fucking thing. Like I did all then the Longest Yard. Let's cut through this. I came out with Spider-Man 2, then the Longest Yard. The Longest Yard started getting me people, but on Adam Sandler's name. And they would come in and run out of there like I was Godzilla. And I'm not lying. There was no pictures then. Nobody wanted to take pictures. They come over, ask me questions about Adam Sandler. But I wasn't, trust me, I used to read this thing. People would go like, fuck that guy. He's up there rapping on stage, and you could see shit's coming out of his nose, and it was horrible.
So anyone who came to your show was like the club giving away tickets, or just random
walk-ups? The only place I sold tickets at that time was Houston, Texas. Houston, Texas had a tremendous comedy scene, and they supported up-and-coming guys. Babbitt was the genius of bringing Hedberg, and I'll never forget, like, Hedberg was just starting to blow up, and the kid had just lost his show on NBC, but he was still funny as hell. In fact, I called him today. Tom, we were at the store that night. Tom Rhodes. And one day I'm talking to Babbitt, and he was, I'm bringing Tom Rhodes in here with Mitch Hedberg to co-headline. That's like Ali at the time and fucking Joe Frazier coming to your fucking bar and having a drink with you and snorting blow. I never heard of that before. Doug Stanhope taped the CD there. Rogan taped the CD. So people would just come there on the strength of the fucking club. And if you drank on stage and were getting fucked up, you were selling out.
Wow. So you people would come back for you every time you went?
Yeah, in Houston. I started building a market, but then the club went out of business. And everything fell apart in Houston. Which was good, because I started staying in more and focusing on film. But it's just weird that this whole thing started. The reality of this podcast thing, for me, this thing started on the Rogan podcast and then went on Beauty and the Beast when I told the story about mugging the hooker.
Yeah.
When I went down to that comedy club that night and there was 100 people there, and the owner called me and said, he goes, you know, there's 100 people here on a Sunday night. And they paid. And I'm like, you bullshit. And he paid me my money. He gave me a door deal and everything. I was blown away. This all started. So this was why this is the weirdest thing ever. That I never thought I'd get booked or never thought. But this all started by just telling people stories and telling them the truth. And that's it. You know how embarrassing it is to let people know you mug somebody or that you went to jail? You know how embarrassing that is?
How different is your set now versus when the Longest Yard and all those things?
Oh, my God. All right, the Longest Yard, I had been doing comedy now for 13 years or something like that. 91. 91 is 9, and 5 is 14. I was at the store. I was following good people. But I was just telling jokes. You know what I'm saying? I would just go up there.
Do you remember any of them?
Like, no, they were so bad. They were so bad. Then Whitney Cummings directed, produced the special. About 5 or 6 years ago, when Whitney started getting big, she blew up. She produced a series on Showtime about comedians. Short-lived, 6 episodes. I don't even remember who was on except one particular guy. And I was doing coke in my bathroom with the door open, listening, taking a shit. Just doing little bumps. My wife was out, whatever, and I'm doing little bumps. She wasn't my wife at the time. Listening to this guy, and that's when I realized how bad I was. I knew I had to do something different with my act because he had the same sort of... He's not around no more.
Mm-hmm.
So I was correct. He's doing something completely different now. But me listening to that guy, I was like, me and him are allowed to say it. This is horrible. This is Rodney watered down doing something else. Do you know what I'm saying? It was just really weird. And then I just... At the time, I was writing stories. And one night I popped one of them on stage, and I realized how intense I had the people. I had the people locked in somewhere where my comedy had never locked people in before.
Had you prepared the story, or just you went into it?
I wrote the story like 2 days before, and I was on stage dying somewhere. As usual, I was on stage just fucking dying somewhere like a flapper's ha-ha. And I busted a story, and I saw the effect. And then Ari, something happened, and I went down to... The Improv, and it was Marc Maron way before the fucking show, guys.
Yeah.
the podcast was just getting started, maybe a year in, a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And I went down to the Improv because Ari was going to do a show about telling stories.
It's a Pink Floyd story, right?
The Pink Floyd. But here's the beauty of it. And this is us as family, because I'll tell you, mother, and you know it. Do you think when I drove there, I was going to tell the fucking Pink Floyd story? What the fuck do you think? As my fucking Jew brother here on Rosh Hashanah, a big shout out to all the Jews that are listening right now. You know, you're my people deep down inside. Fuck these Gentiles. When this shit is over, I'm going to Israel with you motherfuckers. You understand me? And that's between us. Don't tell these other people. Fuck them. Listen to me.
You didn't. I don't think you knew until you started. I don't think you might not have even known until you started saying something.
I swear to my daughter Mercy Diaz that when I walked into that Improv that night, I was telling a story about something completely different. And somebody was up there and they said something. And I go, wait a second, what am I going to go up there with that shit for? I'm just going to go off the cuff on the fucking stupid Pink Floyd night with Lubes and Joe Focaccio, and that's what happened. And somebody sent it to me. And I said, I don't want to watch that shit. And then somebody put it on MySpace or one of those.
It was that long ago?
Yeah. And we clicked on one day. I was high and I watched the first 2 minutes. And I got to tell you, I was blown away. I was embarrassed. I turned it off. But I couldn't believe how I was saying the story. And I had fucked up at places. I know I told him like he was a Marine. I had fucked up at places. But I still told the story.
So how long have you been doing comedy the way you're doing comedy now at the store?
5 years.
That's it?
4 years. But the last year has been something completely different. Once I went back to the store.
So right around the time we met, that's crazy.
That lit the fire under my ass. I'm a different comic than when I started hanging out with you than what I am today.
So that's interesting, right? If you think about that, and you are. I mean, what you're doing on stage right now is brilliant.
It's completely, it's not brilliant. It's completely... It's completely different.
I think a lot of people think it's brilliant.
No, it's very, very funny.
Let's put it that way. But that's a good thing to kind of bring up, right? I mean, you had these things, you had these TV shows, you had The Longest Yard, but there was a reason that people weren't coming after it, right? There's a reason, and I think it was because of what you were doing on stage, you know. And if you look at what's happened to you, I hear so many comedians that just go, you know, I should be out there hustling. I should be talking to agents more. I should be, you know, sending my demo reels or my headshots to William Morris or any of those things. And I keep telling them, like, guys, there's a lot of people who get paid a good amount of money to go find you. We'll find you.
And just, I was going to say, how often, like, Joey was saying he sent out a lot of resumes. How often, every week, how many submissions do you think an average agency gets? Thousands?
A ton. Oh, my God.
So many. And I feel so bad. I mean, it's such a waste of money and time and resources. And this is, you know, what Joey and I were kind of talking about. You know, we wish we could just tell these comedians, like, just focus on your craft. Like, trust, when the time is right, we will find you.
Now, sure. Mike, a conversation you and I had.
Yes.
Because you and I don't lie to each other, and I don't lie to Lee either. Now, let me tell you the other side of this story.
Mm-hmm.
This is where opportunity meets whatever. Joe Rogan's my brother. I've been running with Joe since 1998, since news radio. When fucking Fear Factor premiered, I was in New York with him. He bought a Samurai on 48th Street. Who stops in New York City? And what? Listen to me, motherfuckers. Okay? The summer of Fear Factor, we're walking down Manhattan. He's there to announce it. I'm going to go do some other fuck work job. But he calls me, he goes, come with me, keep me company, let's go. I'll pay for it. I go, fuck you, let's go to New York. What the fuck? We're walking down Broadway. He's in a store buying a Samurai. On the fucking thing, it's Fear Factor with his picture.
Like a Samurai sword?
A Samurai, like some statue of a fucking Chinese guy with a hat that his eyes would blink, okay? He's in there going, Joey, you got to look at this fucking thing. And I'm in my mind, where are you putting this? He goes, what do you mean where I'm putting this? On my front door. The eyes will glow at night. I'm figuring if I can put eyes on it. So anyway, I go outside. I got a page. I got $3 in my pocket that I stole from the maid when she wasn't looking. Like, that's how broke I am. Do you understand? Like, yeah. Seriously, I'm telling you guys the truth. But Sopranos is the hottest show. Here's Joe Rogan talking to me on Broadway with his billboard flashing on 42nd Street, but people asking me for my fucking autograph because they think I'm big pussy. How fucking crazy is that?
That's funny.
Now, let's talk about Joe. Joe was on news radio. He went out there for peanuts. There were times they were calling for a replacement gig, and he would lose money on the plane ticket and what they were paying them in the beginning. And people were coming out to see him from news radio. Then there was like a year lapse. Once he got on Fear Factor, people started coming out by the droves. And I guarantee, like a lot of other people, a lot of people left there very disappointed. They thought it was going to be a quirky host. They ran into a good comic. And somebody who talks about politics and icebergs and rocket ships and is very intelligent in his material. But he kept half that audience. And then when that show ended, he did something else. Then he got the UFC. And he's built that. He's built that audience over the fucking years. Now, I've known Joe since 98. I've opened for Joe in every fucking improv in the country. But guess what? Guess what, guys? I did something that I did not know I was doing that I heard somebody else was doing. I heard that Dane Cook answered people. But all of a sudden, Dane Cook became a star on MySpace. And all of a sudden, against my will, you know me, I didn't even want to text. At that time, I was the last one to hold out for a fucking cell phone. I didn't go with a cell phone until 94, baby. I'm not going to lie to nobody. I held on to that red page. That thing went underwater. That thing had blow on it, acid. I had minerals. I shoved it up a chick's pussy. That blow, that pager was gold. Every time I went out with Joe, I would do blow, and I'd go back to my room, even when I lived on Schrader, and people go, friend you, and said, we saw you at Joe's show. This is 8 years ago, and I would friend those people and say, thank you for coming out. All those people I friended, I guarantee 10% are still lingering around somewhere or another. Because I had the opportunity to go on the road with a guy that was drawing more than I could ever, ever in my life dream. But I would always prepare those sets. This is my chance to go. This is the All-Star game. And I got a fucking chance at bat. These people don't know I've been to prison. These people don't know about addictions. These people don't know I canceled planes. One time I left my luggage and walked out of the airport and got arrested at LAX. I was so paranoid on cocaine for the night before. I got no reason to lie to nobody in this room. And here I'm getting a shot. There were nights I'd go to the Comedy Store. Lee, I don't know what the fuck I'm saying. But when I would do those Joe Rogan sets, I would sit down. While they were out doing push-ups and shit, and they thought I was in my room doing blow, I was writing the craziest shit I was going to write in my life and say it. And guess what? Out of those 1,200 people, I made 30% of those people my fucking people that now listen to the podcast. Do you understand me? I was very intelligent. And when they moved to Facebook, they came with me to Facebook. Now I answer them. And now they came to Twitter. And I know comics get sent messages on Twitter. Guess what? I'll answer them. If I see the fucking thing, I'll talk to you back and forth. If I'm on there, rocking and rolling. If somebody says they came to the show or they bought tickets, ask them. I say thank you, and I'll see you there. That's an extra move. So over the years, that gift, that's the gift that I didn't do before. I thought, oh, I'm on a TV show. Call the fucking club. You know, call ICM. Tell them Joe Diaz got 40 and he's on a TV show. No. I had to work it from the other end.
Yeah.
Where's fucking Tony Bennett? What are we here? Looking at me all weird from? I want to be around. Big motherfucking Mike in the house tonight. Lisa, yeah, how you feeling, buddy? You want to eat this little purple dot? It's only 10 milligrams.
I've had 325 milligrams.
Stop lying to the
public. I'm not lying. Show the rappers. All of a sudden, the rappers don't have labels on them. The one-eyed Jew doesn't use labels.
This ain't the one-eyed Jew. I bought this from the Russians, see? You're giving out information that's not yours to give out. Why are you throwing the one-eyed Jew into this conspiracy? Why are you throwing the one-eyed Jew into this fucking conspiracy?
Rosh Hashanah, we got to get some credit somewhere.
No, but you can't mention it. He's at home right now fucking smoking opium, getting his dick sucked with a bagel. You know, or whatever the fuck they eat on New Year's, gefilte fish or fucking white fish or whatever the fuck they eat. Anyway, you know I love you Jewish people. Happy New Year to you, and hope it's a better New Year and you make more fucking money and you take over. And we'll start a little neighborhood in Cuba. We'll fucking rendezvous in Havana. What's up, ball sniffer? You felt good today, didn't you? Uncle Joey took you at 10 in the morning. You rolled around. Men sweated on you. They choked you.
Today was like the day, the first day I did the elliptical. I went home and I just fell asleep.
Good. You deserve
it. I couldn't help.
Fucking great today. He was sweating. He was drenched.
It was tough.
Stuck his toenail in my leg.
No, I cut my toenail.
He stuck that little fucking Auschwitz foot right in my fucking leg. I had him in a half guard, and he fucking put his toe in there and broke the fucking half guard. His toe got right in there. He has one of those little Jew toes, one of those little New Year's toes.
What did he say? Like the foot that kicked Jesus or something?
Yeah.
In front of the whole jiu-jitsu class, he got the foot that kicked Jesus.
You know how we do it. Yeah, you. That's your. I'm telling you, you have an uncle. He was there when they were kicking Jesus. Those little Jew feet. You could tell when they related to somebody who was kicking Jesus. Pontius Pilate went around and got people like with feet like you. He said, "We got to do a good job." People kick Jesus. Why'd I come up with that one?
I don't know. Jesus Christ. But it was fun. I'm really liking the small class. And then Nick, we had him on the podcast. He was one of the guys who did the stick fighting.
Sure.
He's fucking crazy. And it's,
you're looking,
I'm having
better
a lot more
already.
Fun.
Your hair's growing. You're
no,
pulling
it's
it
not.
Back.
Yes, I wish.
Fuck Ropecia. You're doing this.
I took that when I was young, like 12 or 14. But then they came out with this. It had the side effects. So we stopped.
What are the side effects?
You can't get a heart on.
Fuck that. You could always get that little stubby heart and shit.
Little stubby.
What does that say to you?
Did you just fall asleep?
No, I'm not falling asleep. I'm fucking going to say something to him and I had a brain fart. It happens at this time of the night. I mean, now, in this market today, let's be honest, beside the Chelsea Handler people, who were talking, it's very tough to just be on TV and attract people. And I know Anzi Ansari is one of them that's been on TV. He's got a couple specials.
But it's transferred. It's over now. It's over to the internet. People do that. Like the Vine stars and YouTube stars are doing that. They just, have you seen like right at the freaking Comedy Store, that YouTube guy has a billboard on that hotel.
I don't know.
So I think that's what it's transferred to.
Yeah, but even that's very difficult. I mean, it's very, very hard to break through. You have to be great, you know, to be able to really sell tickets. You have to be, if you want to do it for the long term. I mean, you can have a pop. People that are mediocre, they come up with some kind of catchy video or some song or some bit that blows up. But in order to maintain it, you have to be great. You have to constantly work, and you got to be doing exactly what you're doing. You got to be at the store. At the Laugh Factory, you know, at the Comedy Cellar, at the Stand in New York. I mean, you know, you have to be at these places constantly writing and you know, really taking that approach of doing a new hour every year and a half, something like that.
It's not even about the hour, Mike. It's about evolving.
Exactly.
You know, I go out sometimes and I'm embarrassed. I got white fucking hair and I'm standing next to 25-year-olds. I could be their uncle two times.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's, you're embarrassed. You're like, what the fuck are they coming here for? What, don't they know? Don't they have an idea? And in this, what we're doing now, you have to open up yourself. Listen, a great example. Last Comic Stand. First three or four seasons, everybody who was associated with the show did great. The ones who stayed out there were the ones that had been doing comedy for a while.
Right.
And even then, you know, Ralphie May is a great example. When was he in Last Comic Standing? 22 fucking years ago? He's still out there banging it out. There's reasons for that. He was always a great comic. When he got on there, he was just at his real peak of busting the fuck out there. So he's built that fan base over the fucking years. But a lot of them, you don't even hear from no more.
There's very few of them now. Like, the only is a few that I can think of.
And I love those guys. I had tons of friends that were on that fucking show.
Well, not even...
Eliza Schlesinger was a winner. She's still out there banging it out.
Yeah.
Who else?
Felipe.
Our buddy, the black dude. That moved to Arizona, came back. He's hosting the show now. Alonzo Bowden.
Oh, okay.
Was a finalist. Rich Voss is still out there from time to time torturing people. I love that motherfucker. I see him in the store and he was leaving. I wish we could get him on the podcast for some laughs. There's still a lot of guys that maintain because, A, at the end of the day, when you go on a Friday night, these guys deliver.
Yeah.
I've always believed in, you know, you come to the fucking show. Listen, I'm not going to lie to anybody in this fucking room. I wish I was still a feature act. I wish I could go into a club, let Lee do 10 minutes. The bartender comes over, slips a package in my hand. I give him $40. I put it in my top pocket in case the cops come. The MC does 10 minutes. Guess what? Uncle Joey goes up there, does 30 minutes of material in 22. So they don't stop fucking laughing. I get off the stage. Thursday night, I do a couple bumps. I'm out of there. It's off me. It's off me, guys. I don't give a fuck what happens the rest of the night. You think I give a fuck if that guy can follow me or not? After a while, I learned that I was part of a show.
Right.
But I was a feature for fucking, 18, 19 fucking years. I know how to fucking feature. You want me to do 30 minutes, I'll do fucking 24. Watch. You better open up the fucking door. Because I'm going to come out of there like a barracuda. I got nothing to lose. I just go straight, and I get the fuck off stage, and I go get my dick sucked and do blow. Once you become a headliner, it's a complete different responsibility. I wish I could still go out and do 20 minutes and not give a fuck whether they laugh, don't laugh, drink, don't drink. I don't give a fuck. But to become a headliner, it takes something else. Now you have to start caring about them. Even when I went on the road as a headliner for years, do you think I gave a fuck about them? I wanted to go out and do blow. I don't give a fuck about these people, whether they like me or not. I'm getting a paycheck. The bartender, he's Mexican. He's already got his cousin over here on a bicycle. You know what I'm saying? I got sleeping pills in the room, and this little waitress says she likes to party. You think I'm worried about these people? I'm not even going to come back here next year. I'm going to be on a TV show next year. That's what I would tell myself. Fuck these people. But for me to go out every week and maintain it, I got to fall in love with the audience. I got to keep writing, and I got to keep evolving. Listen, some people can write really fast, some people can't. I know if I give you a quick 20, take a picture with you and give you a hug, we're straight. We have a good time, we laugh. Next time you see me, I have a new fucking 40. That's just the way life the fuck is. Maybe not. Maybe I'll have a new hour 10. If you know me, I'll have an hour 10, but who the fuck knows?
Yeah, if it's a year later, most of it will be new. Did you see that Kevin Hart just filmed a special at Eagle Stadium?
Yeah. When I went out with Joe Rogan, Mike over here told me a story about Kevin Hart. Tell him what happened with Kevin Hart. I'm going to equate it to what I do with Rogan. Tell him.
It was such a great, the way he built that whole thing. He talks about it on the Marin podcast. And I want to say it was Soul Plane, one of these big movies that he had that just kind of came out, and he thought that was going to be it.
That movie.
And it just tanked. It just didn't do anything for it. And he calls his agent at the time, and he goes, put me in every single club. I don't care how much money I make. Every week. I want to be on the road every single week. And he goes, tell him to just fill the room. Just comp it out. Fill. I want every fucking seat packed. And I'm going to turn those people into my people. So you'd go to the Houston Improv or whatever, and he'd go, just fill it. I don't care who they are. I don't care if they've ever heard of me or whatever. I'm going to put on such a good show and that they're going to become my people. And he would kill it. And he did, you'd have 300 or 400 people in the audience that wouldn't know who he was. They just signed up for, a free ticket for something. Hey, let's go to a comedy show. Great. This guy has you know him from Soul Plane. He had enough credits that people would come in and see him. And he would sit there after every show with a clipboard. And he would just get email addresses from every single show. And it turned in from 2,000 a weekend to whatever it was to 5,000. And he started building that audience. And he kept doing it on time and time and time again. Kept hustling, and built it, and basically got to the place where he could go to a studio and say, "Hey, if you want my fans that I now control and I talk to on a regular basis, you're going to pay me whatever it is—$1 million a movie. I don't know how much money he makes a movie, but I would imagine it's probably around a couple million bucks a movie." And he did that because he built it all himself. No different than what you're doing or what Dane Cook did at the time. And that's such a good story for every comic to sit there and go, okay, instead of waiting for Hollywood to come around, instead of waiting for the right role to come around, this was his role. That movie was supposed to be everything. And instead of just sitting there and bitching and whining, he goes, put me on the road. Let's go. Let's go hit it. And he created his own opportunity. And he did it by working his ass off. And that's something that every comedian out there can do. And it's one of those things, I hear it all the time where, they go, oh, man, I'm killing. I don't understand. And it's like, okay, but are you talking to these people? You go play a club, I mean, the best story, Joe, I think I told you this. My roommate at the time, this was a while ago, he started dating this new chick. And this girl goes, oh, I've never been to a comedy show. And I go, great, go to the improv, you know, tell them my name, and you'll be fine. They'll take care of you, the whole thing. And she calls me afterwards, and she goes, that was one of the best nights of my life. And she's giving me the headliner's material. She's telling me these stories and the jokes and the whole thing. And she's like, I love this guy. He was so funny. And I go, that's great. Who was it? And she goes, I don't know his name. I forgot his name, but he was so funny. And I go, my God, Joey, this is what's happening to so many of these comics out there. They're going out there and, you know, they're being funny, but they're not doing anything. They're not talking. They're not going out there. I mean, all those little tiny things that you can do, they're not collecting an email address. They're not putting out an album. I mean, you know, one of the things I keep trying to kind of educate people on is, you know, we should be giving this audience things every single time. So if you really are that funny as a comic, if you really are that great, you know, go record an album for $300 and give it away to people in exchange for an email address. You know, give them a podcast every single week where you can, you know, you can show your point of view and go out there and do it. There's no need, with how easy it is to do this, there's no need to sit back and wait for Hollywood to find you. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. And that's just not a way to make a living. You're waiting for some casting director to decide, you know, whether your eyebrows fit this role or not. That's, I don't know.
It's a complete different game.
It's a complete different
game. Mike, it's a complete different game. I went to a place today, and I know the girl's an actress, and she works. And, okay, you know, I'm an old man. I don't expect to go out every week. This girl, not only is she young, she's a fucking knockout. She goes, I haven't been out in 4 months. She told me the agency, they're big-time agent. 4 months she hasn't been out.
To an audition.
Yeah. Things aren't what they used to be anymore. You know, they have too many different markets where they're shooting. I don't know what
the. But here's the beauty, right? So what is she doing? And this is always my kind of question. Okay, is she going to the UCB? Is she going to Groundlings? Is she going to acting classes and doing the right things? Is she doing internet sketches with her friends? Is she doing Funny or Die videos to be seen out there? I mean, there's always something that somebody could be doing, right? Maybe she is, and she's just not getting love. But if you really are that talented, and you really are capable of booking something, it'll come. You just got to put yourself out there. You know, that's the one that I've never seen anybody that's that funny that hasn't gotten the
break. You see what happened last week?
With what?
That chick with the fat shaming video.
Right. Yes.
Okay. Let's draw it out on the table. You know what her mistake was? She didn't have a podcast. If I put that video up next week, nobody would say boo, because I'm a fucking fat guy. And what I'm telling her, what she was saying, she made great points. I'm not going to sit here and tell you she didn't make, but the way she did it.
So let's say, what
the
do you
way
think?
She did it, if she would have had a following, that would have went a complete different way. If she would have had an internet big time following. I don't know how many hits the video got. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, what do you think would have happened if, like, because her thing is she's skinny, she's being mean to fat people. Like, let's say you were making fun of, like, it was a racist thing. Do you think it would still be okay?
If she did it?
And if you did it. Like, I'm trying to think of the equal amount of, like.
It's got to come up with somewhere. Now, so what's she going to do now? Is she going to go on the road from that video? You think somebody called her? You think fucking.
No, I don't think she's
called her and said, we're taking it on the fucking road. We're going to get 10% of the hits on YouTube.
I haven't actually seen it, but I heard it's not that funny.
It's edited.
Yeah.
So that's where you lose me.
Yeah.
When you're a comic, throw that motherfucker at Uncle Joey.
Yeah.
When me and Lee tape, I fuck up, we start from scratch. That's why you do comedy. That's why you
she's
do
not
fucking
a comedian.
Comedy. Well, they're all comedians. And that's what people have. That's what gets under my skin. Not only am I a comedian, I've done comedy in Buffalo and a bus theater and a bus station in Albany. There used to be a bus station in Albany that Yoder used to fucking book.
What?
A bus station on like Thursday night.
You gotta by go. The lockers?
You gotta go. Give me a couple minutes.
Yeah.
What?
Like where would you do comedy at the bus
station? Inside, there was a bar. Okay? And you would spend the night in Albany, like down the corner of the hotel.
Great.
Fucking craziness. And then you went to Buffalo. And then the guy that used to bug Buffalo was Rob Liederman at the time. And he had a bar, and at the time there was a bar in North Tonawanda that was but I know that this Rob Liederman's bar, the comedy place, was in North Tonawanda, and he would pack it in that, bro. he would pack it in there, Mike. I mean, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, with nobody. Yoda people, 800 a week, pack them in, 20 at the door, eat pizza. The guy had a scam. Guess what he did in the daytime? He was on the radio in Buffalo. So the place is always fucking sold out.
Because he had a free advertisement.
Free advertising. He was the man. Don't forget to come down tonight. He had you on the radio Friday morning and Thursday morning if you came up. But he would, you have to. When you guys know, you're from small towns, right? When you go into a bar and the Celtics are in the game four of the playoffs, guess what? Who gives a fuck about a comedian?
They'll turn you off.
I don't give a fuck if it's Jesus making a comeback with the Apostles and they're going to play a song and you're the first one to hear it with the Stones. You know, you're from Buffalo. And I remember I had to go up during halftime. Like, that was what happened. We came in and he was like, listen, guys, I got bad news for you guys. There ain't no show. This is a Sabre game. My bad. I'm still going to pay you, but do me a favor. At halftime, each of you go up and do 15 minutes. Lee, you have no idea what I learned that night. You have no idea what I learned that night.
How was the crowd?
Not receptive to comedy.
Were they throwing stuff at you, or what were they doing?
About 2 minutes away, Lee. I remember standing there at the back of the room and going, I'm not sure about this comedy thing. Maybe I should just move to Jersey and do some coke. I'm on the East Coast. I should just take the bus to Jersey right now.
What year was that?
97.
So right before you moved here?
I was living here already. I was living here already. And I was taking buses from Toronto, Canada, to Buffalo, to Albany, to Syracuse, the club in the fucking hotel. I was there with Wise Guys, and then it became The Magician. Bought the club from the guy. It sank. And the magician bought it, so he'd open up the club. He was a good magician, though. And he gave you a bottle of vodka when you got to an eight ball. Nice little place on Saturday. On Saturday, the city was locked down. Even Subway was closed because it was downtown Syracuse at the time. Nothing was open. It was like going to those commercials in Citibank. Hello, hello out there. Like I Am Legend.
Yeah.
That's how it was.
Jesus.
I went all the way down. Then I would go to like Albany. Those small towns, I do Roger Paul's, Rascals, and the other place, they have a one-nighter up in Nyack or something, or they used to up that way. Then he had a two-nighter, oh, at the bottom of a Hindu hotel, and he got 15% off at the restaurant. It was fucking brutal.
What's a Hindu hotel?
Just a Hindu hotel, a hotel home by Hindus, and the downstairs just smells like curry, and it's next to a gas station. That's it. That's it. I remember Ralphie went and he broke the bed. He left on a Friday night. Come on, dog. I took buses. I lived on a Greyhound and went from El Paso all the way up to Toronto and back. And then I would get a Yoda gig, do Wisconsin, Michigan.
So this is kind of like the point, if you think about it. So you're making what for those gigs? Like, how much would you get for like a gig like that?
$75 a night. $125 if I headline. $175 if I fucking Happy Rosh Hashanah, Judah.
So, like, someone like Mike would get at most $15.
I didn't have an agent to book me in those days.
That's what I'm saying.
No, and that's the other reason. A lot of comics,
they wouldn't make money.
Go to Mike and go, Mike, I'm funny. I'm on the road with fucking Johnny Bananas. Okay, so what are we going to do with you? Well, put me on the road for how much? I can't book Eddie Murphy for $3 million at Madison Square Garden on New Year's fucking morning because Billy Joel is doing a night show. And then call the Funny Bone to book Joey Diaz for a $600 feature spot. That's $60. Yeah, but they could do it because I was one of those guys. I would beg Richie Super. Come on, Richie, call, get me in as a feature. $60. What are you going to do with $60? Four weeks a month. $60. That's $240. And you know, what are you going to do with $240?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, it's something that most comedians don't realize.
And that's the bottom line at the end of the fucking day.
Absolutely.
That's the bottom line.
That $1,500, you know, if you don't know, typically like a comedy club will pay the lowest fee, though, typically goes like $1,500.
The Funny Bones, 5-6 years ago, offered me way before I met my booking manager. I got a call one day for 12 for Wednesday through Sunday.
Yeah.
And this is a true story. And I bumped into Billy Gardell. in a diner in Burbank. And he was kind of bummed out. He said he had to cancel two gigs because they had just called him and cut his money. This is way before Mike and Molly.
Yeah.
And he goes, they cut his money. What the fuck is going on? And I go, listen, I'll do it for 12, but there's no Sunday in your world. And how much budget for a plane ticket? They said plane ticket is included in the 12. I was like, so for 900, I got to fly to your beautiful city and do Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I just quit. I said, I'm not doing that. And like 3 months later, Billy Gardell got Mike and Molly. Now he's opening up a fucking pizza.
Yeah.
Gardell Brothers or some shit.
But that's the thing, right?
That's, I mean, the bottom
that,
line.
That entry-level spot is the most competitive spot in comedy. And that's what, you know, most comedians don't realize. And so many people that I talk to, they just go, oh, well, can't you just make some phone calls and go in there? And you go, dude, you don't understand. That spot, there's so many comedians that want it. There's so many more comics out there that can kill for an hour that can make $1,500 to $2,000. That's the most competitive spot. And yet you make no money as an agent or a manager or whoever. And it actually takes more effort and more work to book that spot than it would to book the spot where $60,000, you know, $60,000 when you're making $6,000 in one pop. And that's why we have to be so selective with who we get behind. And it's very, because it's very difficult. And there's no payout for years.
And I would imagine, like, it doesn't look good for you to, if you're trying to book the $60,000 deals, to also be calling them for the $600 deal. Like, you kind of have to.
You know, it does if that person's great. You know, if that person is that good where the club owner's going to go, holy crap, this guy's unreal. Yeah, that part does look good. But if you're in the business of trying to get people $1,500, $2,000 weekends, well, that's the majority of your business, you can't survive.
No, because you need like 10 clients constantly out there to make any sort of living.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fucking work.
That's a lot of work.
That's a lot of fucking work. 10 guys, 1,500, 100. That's 600 a month from each guy, right?
Yeah.
600 a fucking month. You got 10 guys. What's that?
6,000. So I guess you could do 5 guys, maybe.
But by the way, it's also like impossible to get those spots. So you're basically asking a club to lose money because you think this guy's that great.
But then again, you have Chris Rock.
Yes.
So now here's fucking Joe's Crab Shack in Bumfield, Mississippi, and you call him to talk to fucking Lee Syatt. Who's this Lee Syatt guy? Well, he's been on Conan O'Brien. He's been on Meshuggah's show. He's been on Jimmy Fallon. Yeah, but I don't know who the fuck he is. Does he sell tickets? Listen, let me ask you something. Chris Rock, his schedule just fell out. I might have a week for you in December with Chris Rock. I'll get him bottom rate. Do me a favor. Put this lease I had in your fucking club. Give him $2,000. It's like I used to do to the Chinese guy. You promise him. Now you always got Chris Rock. Like, hey, what happened to Chris Rock? Hey, he got a movie with fucking Eddie Murphy. I mean, I'll call you next week. And now you know what I'm saying? You just milk the fucking. I mean, there's 1,000 ways to get the guy in. I remember an expression called the guaranteed feature. When I was in a feature act, somebody came to me once. I'm a guaranteed feature. I go, what's that mean? That all the comedy clubs have to pay me $600 a week because Rich Miller said so. So Rich Miller would call other clubs, and that was a good way to get other talent from other areas, you know. But for the most part, and you know, let me tell you something. $600 for a feature act today, it's not even that. I won't name the clubs. There's clubs that just pay you for the sets now as a feature. They don't put you up, wait. Five sets, $100 a set, that's $500. Let's say you fucking, unless you tiptoed through the fucking tulips, how'd you get there? Even if you drove, you gotta knock a deuce off for that. Now let's pretend you're Lee Syatt. You go on that site. What site do you go on?
Let's go with Hotwire.
Hotwire. You get a hotel for 30 a fucking night. That's 4 nights. That's another $120. What do you got left with to do comedy? You really gotta love doing comedy. Yeah, you could schlub CDs and t-shirts, but you're still not the fucking headliner.
Right.
You're still not that. Well, how many t-shirts are you gonna sell? 4, 6, 7 for the weekend? If you have a CD for $5, you'll sell fucking 10 or 15 of those.
But then it's like, I got very lucky when I met you. because like I've had people say, like, why don't you start doing this with other comedians? And I think it's very similar with agents. If they're at a point where they're making money and they're successful, they probably have that person, and that means you have to go with people who have who don't have a following yet and aren't making money. So it's, and then for the people who do make the first, like the first jump at you, like those first agents, then as soon as you start making money, or as soon as the artist starts making money, they jump to a bigger agency.
But here's the bottom fucking line, Lisa. Yeah.
Yes.
And this is what a lot of comics do not realize, that Mike will push and he'll stand behind me 100%. I can't do it by myself. He knows for me to keep growing, the other side's got to do the work, but I got to cover my fucking spread. The first time he has to call me and say, Joey, I just got a call from fucking bum fucking Indiana. You're not twitting the dates. I don't feel like twitting the dates. Joey, what the fuck? What the fuck? It's not your contract, but it's a gentleman thing. You want to sell tickets. You want to hit, you follow me?
Right.
It's those little fucking things. I have to stay up on my game in today's world. In today's economy with comedy and all the fucking free media that's out there. I don't even know if I'm saying I'm fucking stoned. All the free entertainment that, because look, our biggest audience right now are 9 to 5 people. Tomorrow people are going to go on their computer, put this on, put the fucking earplugs on, and type letters to communists and fucking listen to this shit. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's basically the fuck it. That's our biggest market.
Right.
So it's not TV. It's not.
No. The podcasting is definitely now the biggest draw.
He'll tell you before he signs a client, what's their prerequisite right now in today's fucking. What's the first thing you tell me?
Well, the first thing, obviously, is, you know, how strong is the hour? And then it's, okay, well, what else is there? You know, is it the podcast? Is it the social media following? Is it, I mean, I don't see a reason why every comic should not have a podcast. I don't understand. Yeah. It'd be hard to convince me why it doesn't make sense to have a podcast.
There's only three. Louis, Kevin, and Gabriel. Other than that, I can't think of any big ones that don't.
Yes.
Maybe Sarah Silverman. I don't know if she does.
Sarah does not.
But I think a lot of those guys don't have to.
They came up in a time that it wasn't necessary.
It wasn't necessary. Things work differently for people. And that's different paths. And everybody, listen, the most important thing about this game is that opportunity is there. It's what you do with it. I have, like I said, I got to open up for Joe. I got to meet a lot of people through fucking Joe. I took advantage of those numbers. When they wrote on Twitter, I wrote him back. I would go to Milwaukee with Joe. He'd sell out 2,000 seats. The next morning, guess who my phone call was to? I didn't give a fuck what time it was. My agent to say, hey, I opened for Joe last night, and there was 2,200 people in there. Call Milwaukee the first fucking thing you do today. But I don't understand, because there was 2,200 people. Even if I fucking get 20%, I got a show. I got a weekend. They're going to pay.
Right, yeah.
Okay, that's the fucking mentality. I got there, I got an opportunity, and I did my 20 minutes. Kevin Hart was brilliant. That was brilliant. Calling your agent and going, get me whatever. I want to go out there. They're going to put 2,000 seats in a weekend, 1,600 at an improv, and if you get 50% of that, it's 800. Now you got something. Now, plus that 800, 4 more 100 are going to come. So now you got 1,200. Now you got a small theater or a great weekend at a fucking comedy club. Now the next time you come, you get another 500 attached to that. Now you got 1,800. In 5 fucking years, that's the patience.
And he probably didn't have to give away free tickets after the first year.
No, he just told you the fucking story. After the first year. First time I saw Sheryl Crow, they were giving away tickets. Album dropped. The next time, I paid 20-something fucking dollars. Let me give some shout-outs so we can get this guy out of here. He's got to get back on the phone and fucking hustle. Shit, it's fucking Rosh Hashanah. This is when you make calls. This is when real Jews are on the phone. Most Jews are at home eating salami right now, waiting for Gabriel to open the door. Don't they leave the door open for some fucking spirit? Real Jews are on the phone.
Jehovah, not Gabriel.
All right, whatever his fucking name is. Tim Hofer.
There's no Gabriel.
Jason Brazil. Judaism. Kevin Zoll. Matthew Oliveris. Gitch from Clifton, Richard Maynard, Andrew Nandial. You know I love you, cocksucker. Thank you for going for the doctor. Maddie's World, Steve Zoe, and DJ Door or something, whatever. DJ Ding. I don't know what the fuck your name is. I don't know what you do for a living. You know, I'm not in the mood to get into it right now. All right, this weekend we're in Vegas, Saturday night shooting the special. Next weekend, New York City at Gotham's, and the week after that, the Toledo fucking Funny Bone. Go on their website for infos and times. Don't be bothering me with those fucking questions, all right? What, Lee? What's the problem? You don't want to eat this last star?
No, I don't
want to eat this last star. Right now, there's a kid in Africa with flies in the fucking corner, thirsty as fuck. And if I go over there with this star and tell him.
You're going to make him more thirsty?
No, I wouldn't.
I'm thirsty as fuck right now.
There's a THC killer right now. Would you eat this right now? And I'll bring you a steak in an hour. He would eat this. And you're turning this down. This is what I got to deal with.
Yeah, but you're not going to bring me a steak in an hour. You always say, what do you want to eat? You want a milkshake? Never go get milkshakes.
Because you tell me that you're counting your points, and God forbid that the wife finds out we're eating milkshakes, then I got to get a fucking ear beaten. I don't need this aggravation in my life. I'm trying to put shit together here. You are doing a great job with what you do. You
know, thanks, man. I wish I could be more helpful. I'm not sure. Are there any other questions you think that comedians could
even benefit from? Just from, because Joey always tells me I'm going to be a manager.
Yeah.
And it's a hard thing to know. Like, we were talking the other day, and he said you're going to start like contacting people and start presenting yourself, but it's hard to know how to do that and like what level of comedian to go for. And then it's crazy how you were talking earlier how you don't get a lot of the credit, but it sounds like some managers and agents do guide careers, and it's like a lot to even think about, like, where would I even start.
You and I might both know that there's bad agents, great managers, bad managers, but there are managers and agents that have done a great job and given great clients great advice over the fucking years. There's good and bad, and there's people who know more than others, more people in the game, you know. A couple of years ago, a comedian wasn't doing too well, and he thought he'd fucking do some shit, and he started doing some shit with some tubes and a microphone, and all of a sudden he put them on iTunes. And people started paying attention to him a little bit, and all of a sudden he went to this fucking big-time manager he had, and he said, hey, I got this going on. And the manager goes, and he fired the manager, and the guy went on to be a big star. My point being that this manager wasn't in tune with the future. The future is upon us, and people are not prepared for us. These agencies are really not prepared.
Yeah.
SAG doesn't know how to handle the commercials on YouTube. People don't know what's going on. Nobody really knows what's going on. Eventually, the hammer's going to fucking come down, and somebody is going to know what to go on. That's where you come in. You sat here across from me when we were getting 300 downloads on this thing with no sponsors. You sat there across from me when we shot a documentary. You sat there now. We're going to do a special. We've done videos together. This is what the involvement is. You could go to a comedian and go, this is to what I've done right now. This is what you... Let me get a water over there. You got me over here fucking like a swami.
But that's another thing I've been thinking about, though. And that's another... When I talk to people, ask me questions about podcasts, I think a big reason that we've had success together is because we've done all that, and because for the first 2 months we hung out, we didn't even do it. We just hung out. I don't know if that's possible if you want to have a group of clients.
I think if you're looking at a comic and you're thinking of giving him the keys to the kingdom, showing him a way to become something, but there's also a bargain to that. He's got to keep writing. He's got to send emails. He's got to take pictures. He's got to send out fucking yarmulke. He's got to cover all his bases. Eventually, he'll find his knack, what avenues to work, and both of you work together.
Right.
It's not like you could change somebody's life right now, because they're going to want to call you in the morning and go, so what video do I shoot today? What am I doing today? And you got to go, well, you put up a video 2 weeks ago. Let that get 300 more hits. Then we'll get... You follow me? There's a lot of little things that people do not know, strategies. And right now, when you sign a client, when you go to Montreal and you see a client, they're 26. You know what, man? I could see this fucking guy in that fucking Gotham City. He's got a fucked up eye. I know one of the writers, and he told me, you know what, let me just see who talks to him first. You sit down, all of a sudden, ba-ba-ba goes, And finally, you go over there creeping like a savage. And you ba 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 ba, and then you talk. But right on the spot, before you go up to him, you have to have a plan of what your plan is. Listen, I know Dickie Wilkins. He's one of the head writers on Gotham. He's looking for a character like you. Why don't we get together on Tuesday for lunch? As a matter of fact, if he's smart, the agent, he doesn't really want to sign him. He sees something that nobody else sees. He heard that CBS is doing something with creepy people. This guy looks kind of creepy, this Joey Diaz guy. Let me see if we can get him in the cemetery show, whatever the fuck. This is before 6 Feet Under. You were at lunch with some fucking schlup, and he says they're doing a show about creepy people on cemeteries. You signed this kid. I saw it done with somebody in this town. I saw a fucking guy go to Montreal, sign this black kid. Black kid was shy. If maybe, this is 1998, if maybe the kid had 6 minutes of material, that's all he had. He took him to a popular club, shot the 6 minutes, took him to CBS, got him a deal, blah, blah, blah. Put dreads in his head. The kid shot steroids. One day I'm watching USA. There he is, the sidekick at the Anthony Michael Hall on one of those fucking shows. Guy did 18 years on the sitcom. He's back in the Bahamas. He took the dreads off. He's back in fucking Chicago, you know, counting fucking dollar bills. He had a plan.
Right, but then...
he had a plan.
Maybe this is a question for Mike then, but as an agent or a manager, to know what the plan has... because not every... comedians are the weirdest people in the world, and the Joey's not like Steve Simone, and Steve Simone's not like Ari, and... and to know where to guide them, if I try to go to another comedian and do what Joey and I have done, it might work, but it might not fit their personality just right, and fails.
Yes.
So what I've been thinking about is that you really have to get with somebody and go out with them for 2 months and hang out with them and just know them.
At the end of the day, you know what Mike's job is in today's society, in today's... it's to pour gasoline on a little fire. For example, whoever did the job with Ari Shaffir, they poured gasoline on a little fire. It started with a storyteller show, and the fire spread like what's going on in Fresno right now. Okay, I'm not making fun of nobody. I'm just telling you the truth. They started with a cell. Ari is a terrorist. It started with a fucking storyteller show for $5 in the back room. Ari hadn't done a fucking commercial in 22 fucking years. His commercial career was done. He knew it. He was always out of town. I don't know. I don't want to go down to 200 South La Brea. Ari, there's a nice sandwich shop across the street. I don't know. I'm tired. I was at the store till 4 in the morning last night. I'm blowing it off. Fuck it. I'm not even calling up and shit. He said he would walk into auditions, look at the date, and if he's going to be out of town for the callback, fuck it. I'm not going in there. You know, go in there. Book it. They'll change the dates. They'll work something. But he had an idea. And it was just so now his agent had to go in there and just throw little droplets of gasoline on it. And then spread more. Keep spreading gasoline, and hopefully that fucking ignite will get over there. That was Ari Shaffir. We all saw it happen in front of our fucking eyes. We saw the show go from the fucking improv dungeon. They didn't even serve alcohol back there to, you know, Thursday nights at 11 o'clock on Comedy Central. And it got good numbers. They wouldn't be shooting season fucking 2 right now. Don't be blowing smoke up nobody's fucking ass. It wasn't like, oh, well... but what do you think? Should we vote on Ari? I mean, let's go out and get drunk and throw dice against the wall. No. So it was a great fucking idea. They flamed a little fire, Lee. Yes, I do believe you should start a personal relationship with him for 2 or 3 months and get to know this person. You're about to invest a bunch of fucking time. Once Mike signs you, you got to get on the phone and start licking stamps and calling people. And now I got to send him... Joey, did I tell you I fucking made it to number 1 in Canada on iTunes? Email me that, please.
Yeah, that relationship really matters. And I think, you know, you just got to, like, figure it out. You know, I mean, that's the beauty of it. The same way you did this, right? You got together with somebody. You kind of brainstormed. You failed a bunch of times. You figured, oh, this is how to not do this anymore. Okay, great. Now we can figure out how to do it. And it's just years and years of just... putting in the time, but not, you know, on a Saturday you're spending 4 hours with them trying to figure it out instead of watching TV. You know, I mean, those are the kind of things that that will make you, I don't know, end up building, being able to figure out what those moves are. And look, no one has all the answers. It's just, it's a matter of experience, right? It's a matter of failing a ton. I mean, you could go out with your relationships right now, you could go out and run, you know, take over a night on a Tuesday in North Hollywood at Big Wang's and say, I'm going to do a comedy night. And you could put seven comics up there and you could see who kills it. And you could promote it on the podcast and you could probably sell it out every single night. You could have the hottest room in LA. And then you could build a podcast, you know, area based off of that. You could build a little network based off, okay, who kills on my Tuesday night show? Great, I'm going to do that. I'm going to get that guy his own podcast, and I'm going to build it from there. And you could have your own little management company based out of the Valley that could be very, very successful, doing nothing really different than what you're doing right now. And it's just a matter of you doing it versus talking about it. I mean, that's really the difference.
Okay, so, well, first of all, you might be a genius, Mike. But, okay, so if I the comedians I get to meet are usually medium to higher level.
Yes.
If I invite them to my show, they might do it, but I can't. I'm not going to convince them come to the Flying G management. So it would have to be smaller comics. Like, that's just
First of all, you're a Jew. You're showing up with an envelope. You're showing up with somebody already in your fucking pocket.
There's a lot of people that don't want to work, man. There's a lot of people that...
That's the other hand.
Totally.
Okay.
They don't want to show... You know the people. We've discussed this where he was 20 minutes late again, the third week in a row. He doesn't really want to do a fucking podcast. This is something else to him. You know, we put time into this. We discuss it. We call each other. I torment you. I ask you stupid questions. We get high together.
Sorry, that's a really good... I'm just thinking about your idea. It's real...
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
You should also start a podcast to teach people how to podcast. I mean, look at all this equipment and stuff in here. It's amazing. And the trial and error that you've gone through could save people tons and tons of time.
I've been doing the consulting, but then I'm trying to do... I was thinking of doing a paid course, but yeah, maybe I'll just do a free one.
I would just do it
for free. Fuck it.
I mean,
and do it as a podcast. And you're a smart man.
That's why he's sitting where he's at. That's why he never signed me as an agent. He's a smart man. We always kept a friendly relationship. I call him up when I'm in a bind or I got a question. That's why he's on the podcast, because I know there's comics sitting at home going, what's my next move?
Yeah.
There's a ton of comics I bump onto on the road that are fucking hilarious. They're fucking hilarious. They got it. They're onto something. You could tell. You've been there. You know what it's like when you're clicking, you're giving the headliner a little trouble. People are clapping for you a certain way, and they're stuck. They're scared. They ask you, when I move to LA, what happens? And some people come out, man, go to the store, do three sets, and Three Arts is there, or ICM is there, or Innovative is there, whoever the fuck is there. And there's other people who go to the fucking coloring book, and they bang it out from fucking day one. That's just all it really is. You know, and it's not giving up, but the funny thing is that everybody gets an agent and thinks their day is made. They don't think that's where the work starts. When I first signed with SBV, I would only bring them 8 headshots at a time. They would submit those 8 headshots every week. They would ask me, why do you fucking bring us headshots instead of bringing us a bunch? I'd say, because I'm not doing nothing with my day, and I want you to remember me every fucking week. Every week I'd walk into SBV, into the things. There was a box that said Joey Coco Diaz, and I put 8 headshots, leave, and I come back every Monday. Second thing I did every fucking Monday. And from there, I went to the coloring book and talked to them for 20 minutes about whatever the hot movie was or whatever. I didn't give a fuck. I didn't want them to ever forget me. Then I hooked up with Pablo Francisco for a weekend, and he told me, you're doing it all wrong. You got to take your agent to a strip club, and then I offer him some coke and get them all invested and fucked up. That's how you get them to work for you. And I'm like, I don't know about that one. I don't like fucking strip clubs. I got to walk in there with a fucking guy. He could be a part-time fucking racist or rapist, whatever the fuck he is.
A racist rapist.
I swear to God. I had an agent, a theatrical agent, that I would sell a pound of weed to once a month, because he was selling weed. But on the weekends, he would rent himself out and go to these little city towns and do talent pageants and then fuck the 18-year-olds and come back and show me the pictures. Fucking, this guy was an agent with the suit, the whole fucking thing. I mean, it was just, Lee, you okay? You're into Zomboville.
Yeah, I'm really
Let's do the fucking sponsors and we'll get the fuck out of here. September 14th, 2015. Two more days. It's the 33rd anniversary when I robbed the jewelry store. I always light a candle that day. I was thinking about that. I knew it was a fucked up week.
You light a candle for the jewelry store?
Sure, for everybody involved. You never know.
You ever think of calling him up and...
apologizing?
No, just talking to him. Just like just torturing him. Like, it's been 33 years. I still got some chains.
Look at Lee cracking funnies and shit.
And send him pictures of it.
Lee, look at Lee cracking funnies and shit tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I'm on there. I don't need this aggravation. Listen, you're thinking of quitting smoking? Wherever you're allowed to hang out, you can't smoke, but you could smoke an e-cig. Stop the fucking horizon right now. Hit e-cigs. What's the matter, Lee?
No, go ahead.
Hit e-cigs. Are the best e-cigarette out there in the market right now. 1,200 guaranteed motherfucking puffs. You're not going to get that for fucking what you get at these little stores and shit like this. And it tastes tremendous. If you're thinking of quitting, they got them in 24, 16, and 8 milligrams. And the cigar is just a fucking cigar. The beauty about this thing is I've had this for like fucking 2 months. Are you kidding me or what? It's like smoking a motherfucking Cohiba and blowing smoke in their face and shit. Anyway, go to Hitty Cig right now. They got a special deal. What's the deal, Lee? Five for cinquenta for $50. $10 a piece, 1,200 guaranteed puffs. You'll be smoking e-cigarettes for the rest of the fucking year and the beginning of 2016. Go to HittyCigs.com right now and press in. Press in what, Lee? Lee, press the Joey's Church and get five for 50 beans, all right? Number two, you know who I love. On it. Staying on it. Again, Shroom Tech today. Lee didn't want to take his. I took mine and I fucking did kettlebells and everything. I asked you if you wanted some Shroom Tech. You told me no. You were scared. Your little fat heart was beating. The ghee was making you hot and shit.
Lee's died.
He almost died. Anyway, go to Onnit because you didn't take the Shroom Tech. Anyway, go to Onnit.com right now and look at the great selection of products they have from Alpha Brain, the complete earth-grown nootropic, to the T-Razor, the testosterone powder, to the
MCT
oil. MCT oil. I'm sorry. I'm on a loss of words tonight. But listen, do me a favor. Stop fucking around, and I'll stop fucking around. Go to Onnit.com right now. Go look at the great selection of products they have. Read up. I guarantee it's going to blow your mind. My favorite is the hemp protein, the cocoa, fucking tremendous, 16 grams a scoop, 2 scoops, 32 grams. That's what the body assimilates. Forget about it. You throw a fucking banana in there, some coconut milk, who's better than you? Stop it. Go to Onnit.com right now and check out all the great selection of products. Pick one, any one, and start your life living correctly. They even got blenders. They got everything. I can only get you 10% off on the supplements. I can't do nothing for you on the weights and all the other stuff. So go to Onnit.com right now and press in.
Church.
Boom. There you go. And get 10% off your first order. Tell them Uncle Joey sent you. And also, my main motherfuckers, my cousins from Western New York, New Jersey, NailedItLife.com. If you smoke vapor pens, they got the premier vapor pen on the motherfucking market. Go to NailedItLife.com right now. They got a great selection. They always have the Gumis or Monos available only in California. So don't break my balls, guys. They don't ship. They're not going to send them to you because you listen to the show. They don't give a Frenchman's fuck. Go to those Gumis or Monos right now. NailedItLife.com for you. The Gumis or Monos or what else they got? The little chocolate or cotta bars that are fucking delicious. I put 10 pounds on that weekend. I ate two of them. Delicious. Anyway, go to NailedItLife.com right now and press in.
Joey Diaz.
Boom! And get 20% off your vapor pen. Lifetime guarantee. Something fucks up, you call my man Peter. Boom, he gets it shipped to you overnight. No fucking around. Big shout out to Onnit, HittyCigs.com, Nailed Your Life. My main man Mike for coming out. Lee Syatt, you're a beautiful man.
Thank you, buddy.
Don't forget, this Saturday night I'm taping the special. I'll be there Friday too and Sunday if you don't want to hang out, if you want to come out. Lee will be there eating some Anarchy edibles, some Stars of Death. Next week I'm in NYC. And the week after that, I'm in Toledo, Ohio at the Funny Bone, all right?
Get the Steak and Shake ready.
I won't be in. And listen, that's your fucking
stuff. You're going to be at the Steak and Shake.
I'm not going to go to fucking Steak and Shake. You always go to Steak and Shake. No, I don't go to Steak. I can't go no more because I got to watch my fucking
I see you at the hot dog cart.
Fuck, stop it. Why are you throwing me under the bus for? You know, I walk past that thing like a fucking, like a victim walking past the police station. Anyway, I love you guys. Don't forget about me, Mike. Thank you for stopping by. You know, we had to do it this way because that's the way things are. He's a good man. I want him just to come on and simplify things for people.
Thanks, guys.
That's it. Thanks,
that's
guys.
It. That's it. It.
That's all you got for your Uncle Joey.
Don't contact me and leave me alone.
Yeah, I wish I you know, I'm not a comedian, obviously, but I think it's great. You know, the lack of you know, what's the right way to put it? I think there's a million books on how to make it in the music business and how to write a script and how to do this. There's really no information for comedians, and it's a shame because so much time is wasted away from, you know, writing or performing, or you know, spent on sending fucking submissions to agencies and going out and getting headshots and doing all this stuff that doesn't matter. I went to a show the other day, and it was an awful, awful show. And at the last 10 minutes of the show, after his closer, he stands up there, and the guy goes, "Look, the only way I'm going to be able to get an agent or a manager is if I get a, you know, a larger social media following. They tell me this. This is what, you know, people are telling me, like Comedy Central, all these guys." And he does this whole 10-minute thing. After his set, he stands on stage, doesn't walk off, doesn't do anything. There's this whole, you know, plays the victim, and everyone, "Oh, I need to do this. So if everybody can just pull out their phone right now and follow me on Twitter, it would really help me, you know, move along." And Joey, it was just like, oh, I wish somebody could talk to this guy and go, "Dude, you're wasting your time. You know, focus on what matters. Focus on being very, very funny, and people will find you." Yeah. You know, Ari, speaking of Ari, Ari has an amazing speech that he gives to young comedians that's on YouTube. Google Ari Shaffir Comedy Store. He goes in the Comedy Store and just talks about it. And, you know, the big things that he talks about, constantly write and just be in the scene. You got to be in L.A. or New York. You got to be just hanging out. Wednesday night's the big industry show at the Improv. Just be there. Be there every Wednesday, and people will recognize you, and they'll see you, and they'll become friends with them, and you'll get to know some agents, you'll get to know some managers, people get to know you, and things will happen. Things will change, you know, so... I hope that was helpful. Any any other questions or anything that you have, let me know. I'm here.
That's it, man.
Lee's gonna start his management company next week.
Think about
his weekly show, Big Wings. Will be the hottest show in LA. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Answer some questions, brother.
Of course.
What song we ending with? Get it together.
I don't know.
Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix. What the fuck? You slipping, Lee. You should have known this. It's Monday.
You didn't tell me till right now.
I told you 10 minutes ago that it was Voodoo Child. You didn't hear what I was saying. What the fuck you think I'm doing here?
That one was taken down.
The good one from the album. Don't fuck around with lives and remakes. And last time you put on like a cover band, I almost fell off my chair. You blew my doors off. Where is it, Lee? Come on.
I'm looking for the album version.
What are you looking for?
It's all live.
It can't be all live. There's got to be something on there. You'll be here fucking with me, Lisa. I put studio in there.
I did that.
Bam, there you go.
What do you think you're doing? No, this is live. God damn it.
That's all right. Play it live. We're over here waiting on you.
Okay.
Just find something, all right?
Fuck it.
You gotta put the volume on or what?
Well, I have to read the ads.
Put the volume on. Put some music on for these people. Save these poor people from boredom. Oh, Jesus Christ.
We had a request to do a thing called All Along the Watchtower, but I forgot the words.
See, there's no... God damn it.
You fucked up. You hit one of the wrong buttons by mistake again.
No, they're all live, dude.
I put on a whole lot of love. How's that? Okay. Led Zeppelin. What the fuck? We ended up with some Led Zeppelin. Thank you, Mike. Monday, September 14th. What do you want me to tell you? You know what I'm saying? Look what I got on. I got the morning... joint shirt. Oh shit.
Are they at joeydiaz.net yet?
Not yet. Couple fucking days. We're just doing a couple demos just to let motherfuckers know. My friend got out of jail. He robbed a printer. We're back. You put some music on, you're gonna keep me here. Oh shit. There you go, cocksuckers. I want to thank you guys for watching. Thank you for all the support. Lee Tayette, thanks you. Mikey, undercover agent, thanks you. Oh, you cocksuckers. Love you. Stay black. We'll be right back.
Huh?